ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show!
Back in your life on this Monday, February 18th, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program, and a happy President's Day to all of you celebrating. I've been living here for 18 years here in this great country. I'm still not quite sure what President's Day is. All I know is that my kids don't have school today, and they're very excited about that. But if you're celebrating, enjoy it. And if you're celebrating and off from work or school, hope you're joining us on the program here today. If you don't have off, I hope you're still joining us as well, because we have a lot to discuss. And I have to admit, it feels a little weird being here this afternoon. Very rare to have a Sunday night UFC event, so it kind of feels like this is actually Sunday, because usually the events are happening on Saturday nights, but we would come back on a Monday, so we'd have that day off in between. But now here we are just a couple hours, like literally 12 hours removed from Francis Ngannou knocking out Cain Velasquez in just 26 seconds, the main event of the very first UFC on ESPN card. It happened in Phoenix, again, like literally 12 hours ago at the Talking Stick Resort Arena. Francis Ngannou coming back from that big win over Curtis Blaydes, defeating Cain Velasquez in a fight that lasted 26 seconds, and there's so much irony dripping off this result. First of all, Cain was in that 64-second loss on the very first UFC on Fox event back in November of 2011, comes back after the 953-day layoff. We had not seen Cain Velasquez fight since UFC 200. He's fighting in his home state of Arizona, and the fight lasts 26 seconds. This, just a couple of weeks removed from the UFC on ESPN Plus debut, Henry Cejudo versus TJ Dillashaw, and that fight lasted a few seconds as well. If you're a casual fan, if you're a noob, let me just say, MMA fights don't usually go that quickly. Now, they can end that quickly. It happens. 4-ounce gloves, anything can happen. But this is some weird stuff. And your heart breaks for Cain. And I know a lot of people are upset that we're calling this a knockout. But my friends, this is one of those weird ones where I feel like I'm living in some kind of weird Twilight Zone. Watch the fight. It lasted 26 seconds. You can watch it over and over again. It fits on an Instagram video. Watch it. Watch it in slow motion. Watch the replay. His knee, with all due respect, his knee buckles as a result of the punches that were landed, as a result of the punches that were thrown by Cain Velasquez. This is not some freak thing. It reminds me of that Carlos Condit, Tyron Woodley fight back in the day, UFC 171, where people said, oh, Woodley won that fight. It was a fluke because Condit blew out his knee. Well, he blew out his knee because of the damage that Tyron Woodley inflicted on him. This is a bit of a different scenario, but it's still kind of the same thing. It's not like Cain just like stubbed his leg and as a result blew out his knee. No, he got punched and landed awkwardly. Yes, something did happen there to his knee, and I just spoke to his coach Javier Mendez, and he said that the knee popped and they're awaiting the MRI results. But to just completely discredit Francis Ngannou for what he did en route to the knee buckling, en route to the injury, and by the way, Cain walked out on his own, no problem, to me is unfair. Francis Ngannou is a bad man, and let's give this guy his props. A year ago, we were all talking about how he choked against Stipe Miocic. 7 months ago, we were all talking about how he was an overhyped bust, how he stunk out the T-Mobile Arena, how he would never live up to the hype that we all built for him and around him, how he was this guy with a big ego who believed, you know, his own hype, who would never amount to anything. Remember all that? Remember that narrative? Remember what Dana White said about him? Comes back after all that, second-guessing himself, lacking confidence, goes to China and beats Curtis Blaydes, and then goes to Phoenix, enemy territory, and does that to Cain Velasquez. I am in awe of Francis Ngannou. I really am. What a performance on Sunday against Cain Velasquez, and later on in the program, we'll talk to him. So many great performances on Sunday, yesterday, on ESPN, and it was a big weekend for all MMA promotions. Bellator had two events. LFA had an event, Cage Warriors had an event, ONE Championship had an event, everyone had events, and there were like weird main events all over the place. Mitrione and Sergey Kharitonov, 15-second no contest, the MVP daily fight kind of lackluster, didn't live up to all the, you know, excitement that we had built for it. And then this main event on Sunday. Even the Invicta main event, Porto Gonzalez, the weird cut and the gruesome cut. I mean, just kind of a bizarre weekend in MMA, but there's still a lot to like, still a lot to discuss. Paul Felder with the big win. And I reported just moments ago he suffered from a collapsed lung. He's currently in a hospital in Phoenix, hoping to be released tomorrow, but he won't be able to be a color commentator on the Prague card, which airs on ESPN2 and ESPN+ this weekend because of the fact that he is suffering from that. Took a shot to the rib, punctured his lung, and now he's in a hospital after the victory. Cynthia Calvillo with the win. But how about Crone Gracie? First Gracie family member since 1994, December 16th, 1994, UFC 4. Hoist Gracie, his uncle, wins three times in one night, wins a tournament. That's the last time that a member of the Gracie family wins in the UFC. Now here he is, 24 plus years later, a cult-like figure. Everyone loves him. He's got the Diaz brothers behind him. He doesn't say a lot. They call him Ice Cream Crone. He's got this funny demeanor where he's just kind of a little bit standoffish, but it makes him endearing in a weird way. You want to get behind him. You want to back him. Goes to the ground like a knife slicing through hot butter and is able to submit the very crafty, the very talented Alex Caceres. Crone Gracie says he wants to come back very soon, perhaps in April, maybe even in May. And I think the UFC has something on their hands as far as Crone Gracie is concerned. Vicente Luque and Brian Barberina putting on one of the best fights of the year in December. We will be talking about that fight. No doubt about it. Unbelievable. Like, let me just quickly read you the stats here on this fight. An incredible back and forth war. And I don't use that word lightly. Fourth fight in UFC history where both fighters landed 150 plus significant strikes, and the third time in a three-round fight. This according to UFC stats. Vicente Luque landed 163 significant strikes. Brian Barberina landed 169 significant strikes. They combined for 332 significant strikes. That is the second largest tally in a three-round UFC fight. And just two behind the all-time record of 334 set by Nate Diaz and Donald Cerrone at UFC 141. The last time both fighters landed 150-plus significant strikes, according to UFC stats, was Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor at UFC 202. That was a five-round fight. That's how good that fight was. That's how action-packed it was. In the end, Vicente Luque wins a hard-fought victory, and it's time that we actually give this man some respect. Give him a top-10 fight. It's about time. Andre Feely with a big win. Aljamain Sterling, Manny Bermudez, Andrea Lee, Nick Lentz, Luke Sanders, Emily Whitmire with a great submission as well. So much to discuss, so much to like, and of course now we're on the road to UFC Prague. Bellator back as well. Let me run down today's lineup and then we'll get to our first guest of the day. The aforementioned Vicente Luque, who will be making his debut on the program. 3:40, we're going to be joined by Jimmy the Brute Crute. You'll recall last weekend in Melbourne, Australia, had that big win over Sam Alvey. Bit of a controversial finish. Mark Goddard coming out afterwards and saying, yeah, maybe it was a little premature. Talking to the big man at 3:40, first time on the program. Santiago Ponzinibbio will join us at 3:25. He's trying to get a fight against RDA. Curious about what's next for him. His position at 170, what's at stake as far as the Woodley and Usman fight and Askren and Lawler, and where does he fit into all of that? So we'll talk to Santiago Ponzinibbio, the proud Argentine, at 3:25. How about the return of UFC strawweight queen Rose Namajunas? She is back. We have not heard from her since our first episode ever here on ESPN back in late June. I'm excited to talk to her. Of course, she returns May 11th in Brazil against Jessica Andrade. Michael Venom Page with the big win over Paul Daly. Did it live up to the hype? Did it not? He'll join us at 2:35 to talk about the win and his upcoming fight against Douglas Lima. That is happening May 11th as well in Chicago, Rosemont to be exact. Francis Ngannou will join us at 2:20. I'm looking forward to talking to him about the Cain win, DC, and what DC had to say about him afterwards. Adi Attar, the manager for the likes of Tony Ferguson and Conor McGregor, will join us at 2 o'clock. Stipe Miocic will join us at 1:45. Scott Coker will join us at 1:25, the Bellator president. Big weekend for him and a lot going on in his world. But first, let us say hello to our first guest of the day, the man who had that big win over Brian Barberina just a few hours ago in Phoenix, Arizona. He is still in Phoenix, I do believe. He's the one and only Vicente Luque, who's joining us right now via the magic of Skype. Vicente, thank you so much for the time. Parabéns to you. Congratulations on the big win.
Thank you, Ariel, and thanks for having me. Man, what a war. It was a big battle. I'm still here in Phoenix. I'm going to be here for a couple of days. And can't say much about that fight, man. It was a war. I enjoyed myself in there. I gave it all and got the knockout at the end.
Yeah, unbelievable finish for you in the closing seconds. Almost a buzzer beater. His mouthpiece flies out. A very dramatic finish. Congratulations on that. I just have to ask, clearly you're coming off of an unbelievable war. I see it on your face. You're wearing it well. How are you feeling, 12 hours later?
You know, better than I thought I would feel. It's not that bad. I'm a bit banged up on the face, but not that bad. My foot, I kicked him in the knee like 2 or 3 times. But the same thing, I iced it, so it's all good. And I'm feeling good. Gonna obviously get a rest after this. But more than everything, I'm really excited, man, and happy for my performance. I think I've been showing it. I've been showing what I can do in this division. I finished all my fights. All my wins are by finish, be it knockout or submission. I'm a dangerous guy, and I'm here, to be a champion and to beat everyone. So I'm ready to go. I'm ready to fight anyone.
So no serious injuries after that?
No, nothing major. Just I got 2 cuts, so maybe 5 stitches, and that's it. Really healthy.
What is going through your mind, Vicente, as you are landing some big shots on this guy? And, he doesn't have a very imposing figure. He's a super tough guy, but not one of those, super intimidating fighters, if you know what I mean. And he is just not going down. Impossible to finish him. He had never been finished before the way you did on Sunday. What is going through your mind as you're hitting him with everything that you have?
You know, that's something I visualized a lot during my camp. I had watched a lot of tape on Barberina, so I knew he was a tough guy. He was going to keep the pressure, and he's never been knocked out before. So I knew he was going to take my shots and be able to survive. So I visualized that a lot so I wouldn't get frustrated during the fight. And I didn't. I mean, I got kind of like when he knocked me down the first round, I was like, man, this guy hit me. So I got to pay it back. And then I just got into that brawler instinct, But I didn't get frustrated at any moment, and I knew I was going to go for the finish every time, and I knew I was going to get it eventually.
Was he tougher than you thought he would be?
Not tougher. I mean, I'm not used to seeing guys take my shots like he did, but at the same time, I expected that from watching tape on him. So, yeah, maybe a little bit tougher than I thought because I'm used to people feeling my shots, but at the same time, he's a tough guy, and I respected him for that before the fight and even more after this fight.
You knocked him out with just 6 seconds left in the fight. Were you aware? I mean, did you even hear the clapper? Did you know that you only had, 10 or so seconds left to finish this guy?
Yeah, I knew that there was 10 seconds, and I had no idea how the scorecards were at that point, so I wanted to finish the fight at every moment. I don't like to leave it on the hands of the judges. I never did. So I heard the clapper, and I said, I got to finish this fight right now. I hit him with the right straight, and then I got the knees in, and I saw that was my opportunity.
To the best of my knowledge, 2 judges had it tied going into the third, but 1 judge, I believe, had it 20-18 for him, if I saw that correctly. Are you surprised by that?
Yeah, I would be because I thought I had the first round. I think he had the second round. And the third, I really had no idea what was going on, but I'm pretty sure I got the first round because I heard him a little bit. He knocked me down, but it was really quick. I took his back. I almost submitted him in the rear naked choke, and then I went to the Darce choke. So I think I had that round, but, at the end of the day, we got to get the finish, and then there is no doubt about it.
How out of it were you? How long did it take for you to regain your bearings when he dropped you?
It was 1 second. I hit my butt on the floor, and I already knew what had happened. I said, shit, I got clipped. Let me keep on fighting. Took his back and kept working after that.
He was doing this thing like he was like hitting the speed bag, and then he would hit you. He was going like that. Have you ever seen that before?
No, I haven't. And he also was trying to grab my hand. That kind of threw me off a little bit because that's the kind of stuff you don't get ready for in training, Not many people do that, so it was kind of different. I couldn't adjust my distance at that point, at that moment, but I just worked through it and did what I had to do.
Any finish in the UFC, and you've now won 4 in a row, all 4 of those are finishes, 8 of your last 9. Any finish has to feel good, but to do it almost at the buzzer, I would imagine that is a little more exhilarating, right? To sneak it in there right before the end.
For sure, man, for sure, especially on a fight like that, I knew it was a great fight while I was in there. Everybody, I could hear the crowd so much. I could hear more the crowd than my corners. So I knew it was a war. So when I got the finish, it was a really special feeling, and I wanted to get that finish. I didn't know what was going on. I wanted to be the first guy to knock this dude out. And, you know, I think it's a big win for me. It's a big statement, and I'm sure that now I deserve, you know, a top 10. I'm a ranked guy. I feel like that, and I feel ready to beat anyone.
We'll get to the crazy rankings in a second, but what did you say to each other afterwards?
Oh, I told him, man, that I have mad respect for him. He's the toughest guy I've shared the octagon with, and, you know, he hits hard. I've never been knocked down, not even in training, so that guy, you know, he hit me really hard, and a lot of respect for him.
Dana White was glowing about the fight. You got the Fight of the Night award, so congratulations on that. Did you speak to Dana White afterwards?
Yeah, I did. Right on the cage, he was sitting down, and I let him know, man, I deserve a top 10 right now. You know that. And then he said that he had an eye on me. You know, they're watching me. They see my fights, and the fans, that's the kind of fights they want to see. Every single fight, I'm sure that the fans love my fighting style, and the UFC recognizes that as well.
So I don't pay a lot of attention to the rankings, but because it was made out to be such a big deal that you weren't ranked and you're sort of bothered by this, I started to look at, you know, your body of work as of late and the rankings in general. How is this possible that you're not a top 15 guy right now? Does that discourage you? Does that blow your mind? I mean, I would imagine, and maybe it's because you've never been on this show before. You haven't gotten the Helwani rub before. Perhaps that's the case. So I apologize if I let you down. But how is this possible?
Maybe, man. Hopefully now they're gonna know who I am. But, you know, I'm sure that I've been doing, like, inside the cage, I've been doing what I have to do. I have no doubt about that. My work ethic is strong in the gym. I've been putting out the fights I need to. I have 8 wins in the UFC. They are all by knockout or by submission. So I don't know what more they can ask for me, you know. I go in there and I bring them the fight. So now I gave them a fight of the night. I think they're going to recognize that. And I know that I deserve a top 10. I feel like that, you know. And I don't know. You know, give me Neil Magny, Ponzinibbio, even Masvidal. Masvidal, I've asked for him after my last fight, and he didn't want to take nobody that wasn't ranked. So I'm ready to go against anyone. And I feel definitely, man, I'm going to go in there, and I'm going to beat these guys for sure.
So you and your team specifically asked for Masvidal, and you were told that he wasn't interested?
Yeah, we asked for him, and he wasn't interested. And then I actually talked, I sent it on Twitter. Like, many people, after I had said in some interviews, many people wanted that fight, so they posted on Twitter, and I posted that too. And then he said, hey, nobody that is not ranked mentioned my name or whatever like that. So, you know, I'm not the kind of guy that is going to get into discussions. I'm here to fight. That's what I do. So if you want to talk, if you want to, you know, have a problem with me, have it inside the cage. We're going to solve it. We're going to punch each other's face. And then at the end of the day, there is no discussion about it. The guy that is the winner won the argument. So, you know, I respect him. He doesn't want to fight an unranked guy. Okay. But I think I'm going to be ranked after this. So now I think I have the credentials to fight him.
Yeah. And your resume is interesting, because usually someone in your case who's not getting the attention that he deserves, who's not ranked, who's not getting a lot of, you know, media attention, is someone who's won a lot in a row, but is usually winning, like, decisions, and they're not very exciting fights. Your fights are the complete opposite. So my only theory is, you're just a very nice guy, right? You're very respectful. You don't talk a lot of trash. You know, in this game, you know, personalities like yours sometimes get overlooked. Do you feel comfortable putting yourself out there a little more and ruffling feathers, stirring the pot? Because it seems like, you know, as we've said many times, the greasy wheel gets, or what is it? The squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the big thing, I'm not going to be someone that I'm not. So I'm always going to be respectful. That's the kind of person I am. And I definitely don't fight for hate. I don't fight for anger. I fight for enjoyment. I enjoy being inside that cage. So whoever is in there with me, I respect a lot, because I know what it takes to step inside the cage. But I'm willing to talk and what is in my mind. I'm willing to get into the shows, you know, and let people know who I am. So I definitely, I'm going to try to reach out for more fans and have them recognize me more. And maybe the UFC will recognize that as well. But, you know, fighting wise, I get a lot of recognition for my fights. People really enjoy it. So we'll see. I think I deserve it. And I think the UFC is starting to see that as well.
The Ponzinibbio one is really interesting. He'll actually be on the show later on, because you are of, you know, Brazilian/Chilean descent, correct?
Yep. Uh-huh.
And he's Argentinian. That would be a huge fight in South America.
It definitely would, man. And, you know, he's a great guy. We actually have talked a lot, and I am a big fan of his fighting style. He's a striker. He brings it. He hits hard, pretty much like I am as well. So it would be a great fight for sure.
Now, we were first introduced to you on the Ultimate Fighter ATT versus Black Zillion show. Where do you train out of now? Now that Black Zillions are no longer a thing, are you with Henry Hoof's team?
Yeah, so I work at Henry Hoof's whenever I have my some time. You know, I try to go there as much as I can, and I work a lot in Cerrado MMA in my hometown in Brasilia. Right now, that's where I have done my last four camps, and it just more focused on me. You know, everybody is really focused for my camp, so I'm able to, you know, have a better organization for that. But whenever I have the opportunity, I try to go to Henry and work on, you know, all the striking and work a lot on the wrestling as well, because they have tough guys over there. So actually, I'm going in April now. I'm going to spend a month in Florida training with everybody there at Hard Knocks. So it's always, I like to go back and forth and keep evolving.
And do you live in Brazil now?
Yeah, so now most part of the time in Brazil, I'm living there over now.
Oh, okay. I thought you were living in New Jersey.
No, so my dad lives in New Jersey. I am always back and forth, but I'm basically now, I'm really based in Brazil.
Okay. So this kind of fight, you know, having the bumps and bruises afterwards, long fight, it almost went the distance, all those significant strikes. Do you enjoy this sort of thing, or is it the kind of thing where you're like, you know what, that was kind of cool to get the love. It was kind of cool to, you know, have people cheer for me, standing ovation. But next time, I'd rather a shorter fight with less damage.
I enjoyed it at the moment, I can tell you that. But right now, I'm already, like, I sat down with my coaches, and we know, like, this was not the full game plan. I didn't go in there and do exactly what we did. We never planned to go into a brawl like that. We planned to go in there and neutralize the guy and beating the guy in every aspect. So there is a lot to adjust from that. And I think that's a good thing also because sometimes you only get to adjust when you come from a loss. So now I'm coming off a great win, and I still have a lot to adjust, so I have a lot of room to grow. And this is not the kind of fight I want to have. You know, I want to get in there and keep knocking dudes out and keep submitting them quick, as I do usually. But at the same time, I think I showed that I'm ready. I'm ready. If you want to take me to long distance, I'm going to keep on coming every single round and try to take your head off every single round. So I think that was a big thing for me also, to show everybody that I'm not just a guy that's going to finish you in the first round. If you want to take me to distance, I'll go to distance, and I have no problem with that.
The bonus money, is it going straight to the bank, or are we doing something else with it?
No, it's going to the bank. It's going to the bank. I'm trying to, you know, get all my money invested in good things. So it's going to go to the bank. I'm going to think what I'll do with it. And it's always great to get a bonus, man. I'm really happy with that.
Okay. Now, you're staying in Phoenix for a few days. Any particular reason why? Like, did the doctors tell you to stay, or is this your choice?
No, it was my choice. Before the fight, I already got some extra days. I mean, you know, the good thing about fighting is that we get to travel to different places. So I figured, man, I'm going to take some days over here and get to see things around. And I like to do that whenever I fight somewhere that I've never been. I'll take some days off after that just to get to know the city.
Okay. Next time you want to fight again, do you have a time frame in mind, or for now you just want to recover?
You know, I'm going to rest up. I think I need a good rest after this fight, but I think June, July, that would make sense. Okay. I want to put three fights in this year, so June, July would make sense for me to put one more at the end of the year.
And when you return, we want a number by your name. We want a number by your opponent's name, preferably somewhere in the, you know, the 9-5 range or so. And then the third fight of the year, now we're talking about some big-time fights, right?
For sure, man. I'm ready to get in that mix, you know. I'm here to be a champion. I have no doubt in my mind that I'm going to be a champion. So the sooner I get in that mix, the better for me. I'm ready to go and to beat anyone.
Watch what happens now, Vicente. By tomorrow, you will be ranked. I guarantee it, because, you know, the rankers, they like to watch the show. They like to see if, like, you know, we give the stamp of approval. Look, now everything's going to change for you. So I apologize for getting a little late to the game here, but what a performance. You certainly deserve all the praise that you're getting. Blown away by your performance. What both of you did, really. You both deserve a lot of credit for what you did. Congratulations on the victory. Heal up very quickly, and I'm looking forward to the next one very much.
Thanks a lot, man. And now I'm going to get ranked. I got into your show, finally.
All the best to you, Vicente. Thanks so much for coming on today. Enjoy your time in Phoenix.
Thank you, man. Take care.
All right, there he is, Vicente Luque joining us. And again, unbelievable stats coming out of that fight. Unbelievable output by both men. Like I said, at the top before he joined us. 163 significant strikes for Luque, 169 for Barbarina. They combined for 332 significant strikes. That's the second largest tally in a three-round UFC fight ever. And it's just two behind the all-time record of 334 set by Nate Diaz versus Donald Cerrone at UFC 141. So a big win for Vicente Luque. The crowd in Arizona very much behind Brian Barbarina as well, who I think won them over with his toughness. But in the end, 4 minutes and 54 seconds for Vicente Luque. Big win over Brian Barbarina. Thank you very much to him. Later in the program, of course, as I said, Francis Ngannou will join us. We'll also be joined by Aljamain Sterling, who had that nice victory over Jimmy Rivera. But in a matter of moments, we are going to be joined by the president of Bellator MMA. Big weekend for them. Once again, they go to Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, and they put on back-to-back shows. Unfortunately, the Friday night show ended in a bit of a weird way, an unfortunate way. Matt Mitrione hitting Sergey Kharitonov in the groin and sending him to the hospital. The fight lasted just 15 seconds. And I reported that Kharitonov went to the hospital. He was released from the hospital, then had to go back Saturday morning because he was suffering from more pain and discomfort. They said that he had a hemorrhoid as a result. I mean, just a very painful scene. Sergey Kharitonov, one of the toughest men in the history of the sport, not one to embellish, not one to fake an injury. So that was an unfortunate ending, but there were some big performances on that card as well. As I mentioned, Austin Vanderford picking up his Bellator debut. Actually, I didn't mention that. I mentioned that in something that we pre-taped before the show. But Austin Vanderford won his Bellator debut. Mr. Van Zandt. And again, let me just say, everyone who gets all up in arms about me calling him Mr. Van Zandt, he talked about it on this show. He likes that nickname. He thinks it's funny. He's running with it. Calm down. I'm not insulting the guy. You think I'd call him that if I didn't clear it with him? You think I'd be that disrespectful? I would never say that about someone. Mr. Van Zandt, he likes it. It's a great gimmick. Let him run with it. He beat Cody Jones, by the way, in his Bellator debut, and I still can't believe, I can't believe that he didn't get a contract after that win over, on the Contender Series. I mean, just unbelievable. How is that even possible? How did he not get a contract with a win over Angelo Trevino? Just, it still makes no sense with Paige and that story. Anyway, their loss, Bellator's gain. So he had a win. Mike Kimball lost. That was somewhat of a surprising result. And then on Saturday, we had the highly anticipated MVP versus Paul Daly fight, the return of Mirko Krokop, Czech Congo with a win as well. So much going on, as always, in the world of Bellator. Let us say hello now to one of the busiest men in the sport, a pioneer, the one and only Bellator president, Scott Coker. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing great, Errol. How are you?
It's great to have you on the show, on our new show here. You can see me, right?
I can see your logo now. But well, I could see you a couple seconds ago.
Yes. Well, this is how we do it on TV. First, we show you. Then soon we'll do a two box of me and you. It's going to be great. There I am. There I am. Scott, thank you so much for doing this.
There you go.
An interesting weekend for you guys at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. I was just talking about the Kharitonov Mitrione fight and MVP Daily. Let me ask you about MVP Daily. It seems like the fans mixed as far as, you know, how much they liked it or didn't like it. What did you think? Did this live up to the hype for you?
I mean, listen, it's a situation where you have a potential big, you know, slugfest, and everybody was expecting a knockdown, drag-out fight. And we promoted it, I think, really well. And, you know, the first round, I don't think there was more than three or four punches thrown. And there were some parts of that fight that was a little bit too slow for me. But, you know, Paul had his game plan. He wanted to take MVP down. And I think that surprised a lot of people. Including MVP, and at the end of the day, it just turned out to be a very tactical fight, which we were not expecting. But listen, you know, MVP won the fight, and he's moving forward, fighting Douglas Lima May 11th in Chicago and continuing the tournament. And that's how the ball bounced on that fight.
Are you disappointed? Like did it kind of not live up to your expectations?
Well, you know, when you have a fight so much, and then you're expecting great things, and then you start seeing a tactical fight, then, you know, there's a part of me that was like, you know, okay, I get it. I understand. I see what he's trying to do. But, you know, we were expecting big fireworks. And you started to see fireworks towards the end of the second round. And then when Paul changed his strategy to start taking him down, that's when things really slowed down.
Who did you score it for?
You know, I'll tell you, that was a close fight. And luckily for me, I'm not the kind of you know, person that when I'm watching a fight like that, I'm scoring it. I'm just watching it as a fan. So, you know, I'm not sure. I did not score it, but you know, what do you think?
It was very close. I can see why Daly, you know, is saying that he won, but in the end, I don't think it's controversial at all. I think it almost really came down to the first round, which, as you said, there was like hardly any action in that round. So it's one of those fights where, you know, you show it to 12 different people. I think like seven are saying one guy won, five are saying the other guy won. So not controversial, super close. But Daly came out afterwards and said, oh, I know why MVP won. Bellator is protecting their investment, kind of taking some shots there. What did you make of his statements?
Oh, really? You know, I didn't even hear it. And, you know, Paul's going to be Paul. And at the end of the day, you know, that's just how he is, man. I love the guy, though, because honestly, when you think about some of the greatest fights in MMA history, Paul Daly's name is in there, and he had the greatest fight with Nick Diaz, and I'm a big fan, but I'm sure he's upset. It was a very close fight, and it was an emotional fight. I mean, we had to keep these guys apart, you know, the whole week of the fight, and, you know, it just got crazy. So I can see why Paul would say that, but listen, you know, you have to think about, you know, you didn't throw one punch or one kick the first round. You lost the whole round by Michael just throwing a sidekick and a right hand, and that was pretty much Michael's whole offense the first fight. So he didn't do anything, and you know, the second round, kind of the second at the end of the second round, he picked it up, but it was too late. And you know, I think he got tired, and I think he got tired from wrestling. And when MVP almost, you know, submitted or going for the submission, I said, this is really going in a lot of different directions that I did not think that it would go.
Yeah, this was his quote. I'm disappointed. MMA politics and Bellator protecting their investment. I feel I won 3-2. In my opinion, I beat that fool. Really close fight. It's just sad MMA is going the way of boxing. I'm a striker who wrestled, so I lose. And the fool they pump money into wins.
I mean, come on. We followed Paul just as much as we followed MVP. They're both great fighters. MVP special in my mind. Paul special too. And, you know, listen, the fight, he had his chance. You had 5 rounds to go out there and do it, and the judges didn't see it that way, and that's just how it goes.
I saw a photo of you, Scott, sitting cage side. It was you, 50 Cent, Michael Strahan, and I think, who is it, Herschel Walker there?
Oh, Herschel Walker, yeah.
I mean, what a photo that was. You're just hanging out with those three studs. What a life.
Just hanging out. Listen, there's, you know, it was, you know, 50, we have the champagne brand. We're doing some stuff together. Michael was invited by Jay Glazer. He came to the fight, and he and Herschel have a great history. I mean, you guys should really, you know, maybe look into it one day, because Strahan told me when he was 13 years old, living in Germany, he went to Herschel Walker's football camp, and he has a Polaroid with him sitting on Herschel's lap.
Wow!
And you know, then eventually becoming playing against him, he said, and playing with him on the Giants. And he said that he was a big supporter of Herschel and a big, you know, follower of his workouts and push-ups and sit-ups. And they had a great chat together. I wish I could have just been a little fly on that wall. But, you know, to have Strahan there and Herschel there and 50 there, it was a very special night.
When your card on Friday ends the way it did with Matt Mitrione and Sergey Kharitonov, what is that like as a promoter? You put so much time and effort into these cards, and it lasts 15 seconds, such an unfortunate ending. What is that like for you?
You know, it's a tough one, Ariel, because, you know, like, no fight fan wants to see a fight and 15 seconds into it for no contest. And that's what happened. It's my first time something like that's happened in a main event in all my years of promoting. So it doesn't happen all the time. Like you said, Sergey is a warrior. He's not going to be that guy that just wants to bow out and find an easy way out. He was genuinely hurt. You know, I don't think Matt threw the kick intentionally to hurt him. So it was just an accident. And, you know, but as far as a fight fan, I'm sure they're all disappointed. And I was disappointed too.
Do you know how he's feeling? How's Sergey? Was he able to fly home?
Yeah, he was able to fly home.
Okay.
And he's, you know, at first they were talking about it was a ruptured testicle.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, oh, my God. Every guy can really, like, oh, could you imagine? Jesus. But turned out it was just swollen. You know, he had a swollen testicle from the kick.
Oh,
and,
my.
You know, it's, I mean, you know, he was definitely in pain. Who's going to roll around on national TV in pain like that if it wasn't real?
By the way, do you agree in my assessment of Austin Vanderford? I like this kid. He's a star. He's a great guy, but I still don't understand why the UFC didn't snatch him up. Great for you guys. They, you know, like I said, their loss, your gain. I think you got something in him.
Yeah, we're going to give him every opportunity, Earl. This guy delivered a great fight on Friday night, and you know, we're going to give him some more shots. Why he wasn't picked up, I don't know the history of all that, to be honest with you. I just know that my guys are high on him, and they think they have something there, and they're going to give him some more tests along the way. So let's see what he can do.
Mirko Krokop returned, defeated Roy Nelson. Was this a one-off for you guys, or do you have a long-term deal with Mirko?
No, we only have a one-fight deal with Mirko, so let's see how it goes. And, you know, I think that, you know, with his fight with Roy, it's, you know, it was a good fight. It wasn't a great fight, but, you know, I think that, you know, Mirko clearly, you know, in my mind, I thought he won the fight. You know, a lot of people didn't think that way, or they thought differently, and Roy definitely felt differently about the fight. But, you know, listen, let it go to the judges and then move on to the next one. So that's how I feel about that fight.
Any interest of doing Mirko versus Fedor, perhaps in Russia?
You know, that's funny because that's what somebody asked me that night at the press conference. And I said, you know, I don't know what Fedor wants to do, to be honest. But if he does want to fight again, I think we should do something in Russia. Bring Bellator to Russia with Fedor you know, have a go. And whether he fights Mirko or not, I'm not sure. But, man, I would like to see that fight. That'd be amazing.
Is your deal done with Fedor?
Yes, we have I want to say a 4 or 5 fight deal, whatever it was. We fulfilled our obligation. He's fulfilled his obligation. So now it's time to sit down and see if there's something to be done.
Are you interested in bringing him back?
You know, I think he's had a great run, and he doesn't need to do anything. He's already proved himself, you know, time in, time out. To me, he's the GOAT in the heavyweight division, or maybe of all time. I mean, the things he's done for MMA, it's been fantastic. And, you know, when I think about what he wants to do, it's going to be really up to him. And if he wants to do something like a retirement fight in Moscow, then I'll be interested in that. You know, if he's looking to sign, you know, another multi-fight deal many years, I'm not sure that we would be in that business.
Okay. Chen Kongo with the win over Vitaly Minnikov, the former heavyweight champion. And so now mm-hmm. It seems like he's the number one contender at heavyweight. But Ryan Bader is the light heavyweight champion, and he still hasn't really committed what he's going to do next. What do you want to see Ryan do next? And to the best of my knowledge, he only has one fight left on his deal, so would you like to sign him before his next fight?
Well, you know what? I don't want to get into the contractual status, but my people tell me we have more than one fight left.
Ah.
So, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, to me, we want to have a long relationship with Ryan Bader. I think that this guy has delivered in that heavyweight tournament, and he has really won some big fights in a very, you know, quick, fashionable way. You know, we want to be in the Ryan Bader business for many years. So, you know, whether we do it now or we do it, you know, in 6 months or whatever, we would like to be in this business. Now, as far as saying what does he want to fight, that's going to be up to him. And we'll talk to him this week, though, to see if he does want to fight in that heavyweight division, because we could put that fight together rather quickly. I want to say sometime during the summer we could put that fight together. But it's going to be up to him. I'm not sure what he's walking around at now, if he's training or not. But we're going to reach out to him this week.
My understanding is that you met with the legend Vitor Belfort recently, who's a free agent. Do you have any interest in signing him?
You know, Vitor, we just had a nice conversation. You know, Vitor fought for me back in 2006. I'm not sure if you remember that. But it was a situation where I didn't have a main event. We were just starting the MMA division, or turning into an MMA company. And it was actually Saki Guevara from Pride that sent over the main event, which was Alistair Overeem to fight Vitor Belfort in Strikeforce in 2006. So I haven't seen him since then. And he wanted to come to the fight. We said hello. We had a nice lunch. You know, he told me he was free. And I said, hey, let's keep talking. But there's nothing imminent or, you know, final about that.
I would like to see Vitor Belfort versus my partner, Chael Sonnen. That's the fight that makes the most sense. There's a long-standing feud there. I don't want to see Tito versus Chael. Why don't we do Belfort versus Sonnen? It makes all the sense in the world. We lost him. Oh, there.
Sorry, I'm back.
Yes. Interesting timing there. Hey, Tito hacked your phone.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's a fight I would love to see, Arrow. You should be a matchmaker.
I would love to.
And a broadcast, you know, analyst and everything. You should do it all. You should be on the promoter side and
I would
love
it.
And do matchmaking for us. And just send me notes on your show.
Absolutely.
Say, this is what I think we should do. But honestly, that's the fight that, you know, Rich and I talked about, was that if we were to do anything with Vitor, I think him and Chael makes a lot of sense.
Okay, but nothing in stone just yet for Vitor Belfort. By the way, you hinted at a tournament, another tournament. You're doing the welterweight tournament. You just wrapped up the heavyweight tournament. Let's break some news here, Scott. Featherweights or bantamweights? I know that you hinted at a smaller weight class, a lighter weight class. Let's break some news. What's your next tournament?
Yeah, I'll tell you right now. It's going to be our next tournament that we're going to offer is going to be in the featherweight division.
Okay.
And we're going to start that in the fall. And if you think about all the studs we have at that weight class, I mean, it just needs to be done. And Ariel, here's something that I'll tell you that we haven't talked about with any other outlets is that I think this will be a 16-man tournament, and we're going to reach out and we're going to start off at 16 athletes and break it down to 8 and then down to, you know, 4, 2, and then 1. So that's the scoop of the day.
Wow, 16. So how long is this going to last?
1 year.
1 year, okay.
Yeah, because the 16 athletes will all fight in one night. So we'll have 8 fights in one night.
Okay, interesting. Oh, wait, so you're going to do the whole first round on the same night?
That's right. Or, you know, maybe we'll break it up back-to-back, like Friday, Saturday, like we've been doing.
Ah, I like
it. I want to get those fighters fought and not have a big break. Otherwise, it's not going to be fair because they have to fight the second round soon. But we're going to have something really cool to talk about because the way we're going to break it down, everything, I think that you know, we should have you be a part of it. It's going to be really fun.
And will the champion, Patricio Pitbull, be a part of it?
We're going to invite him, and I hope he says yes.
Okay.
So,
wow.
You know, just like Rory did, stepped into the tournament. But you know, it's like, you know, we'll probably have a sizable prize money at the end. But you know, these guys get paid good along the way as well. So you know, it's going to be a multi-million-dollar tournament. But at the end of the day, and then I think Patricio will be part of it.
Are you going to add any other featherweights who aren't in Bellator right now to the tournament?
You know what? Right now we have so many. I mean, if you think about it, you got, you know, Pitbull, and you have AJ, and you have, you know, Strauss is coming back this year, and when we have fighters like I think Darren Caldwell will want to come up. I think James Gallagher will want to come back. I think that Aaron Pico will invite Aaron Pico to this tournament. I mean, we have so many athletes. That's why we're going to go to 16 instead of just the 8, because I think that we have a lot of athletes that deserve it. Plus, now we're starting a European series, and I'm not sure if you get a chance to watch the fights from Newcastle, but there's a lot of good talent there. And yeah, he's fighting in April, so you might see that fight sometime in June. I think that's kind of the time frame that we we'll put it together. But I think that you'll see Caldwell fight Horiguchi in June, and then you know, depending on who wins or who loses that fight, that'll determine, you know, if DC wins, then he'll stay the champ, and Horiguchi will still be the rising champ, and you know, maybe they can get a rubber match together sometime down the line. But if Horiguchi wins and he's our champ, you know, then he's gonna have to defend it once a year.
Are you going to be doing a Bellator versus Ryzen card at the end of the year? I've been hearing some rumors of, like, you know, sort of like that America versus UK thing that you guys did a couple of years ago. Is there going to be like a Team Bellator versus Team Ryzen card?
You know, Saki Bar and I talked about doing a I don't want to say a team match because it's really just a league versus league, right? Like Ryzen versus Bellator, and I said, look, we're open to it, and if it makes sense. Business sense, and I'm interested, and we're going to talk about it some more, but I'm not opposed to it, and, you know, we'll bring our best guys, and they can bring their best guys, and let's get it on.
Okay, one last thing for you, Scott, as I'm peppering you with all these questions here, and this is great stuff. I appreciate it very much. Mm-hmm. This is maybe a little inside baseball, but CBS, Viacom, is there any chance that we end up back? You know, you did back in the day stuff with Showtime. Where's the future of Bellator? Where could you, like, what's going on as far as broadcast home? I know you're on DAZN now, but is something happening behind the scenes here for Bellator?
Yeah. I mean, listen, we are on Paramount right now, and we're on DAZN right now. We just signed a great broadcast deal in the UK with Channel 5 and Sky Sports. So we're excited about that. I do know that there are talks about, you know, the company. As you guys know, we've all read it in the financial, you know, paper, is that this company might merge back with CBS one day, and then we'll go have that conversation. But you know, that's not out of the realm of possibility. But right now, it's premature. It's premature.
Okay. All right. Lots of big things happening for Bellator, and you guys are back once again this weekend. Bellator 217. That's another. Actually, that's not a European series card, right? That's just
That's actually a Paramount series.
That's a Paramount series.
It's kind of confusing. I understand why you say that because you know, they're fighting in Dublin. But I think by next year, Ariel, I think all the fights in Europe that we do will all end up on the European series. It's just that this year we already mapped it out, and we're going to stick to having the Dublin show on the Paramount series.
Okay, so that's the Dublin show. And by the way, congratulations on Sky Sports. That's huge. I know a lot of your European fans are very excited about that. They could stop bothering you about that. James Gallagher returning, Peter Queeley returning. It's like an all-team SBG card against the world. Charlie Ward, Richie Smollett. So a lot of big things happening. That's this Saturday for Bellator back in Dublin. Scott, I appreciate it very much. Thanks for all the insight. Thanks for all the information. Congrats on a big weekend in Connecticut. And great to have you on the show. We'll talk to you very soon.
Thank you, Ariel.
All right, there he is, Bellator President Scott Coker. As always, loads of information from him. We appreciate his time greatly. All right, heavyweight division, very much in focus these days. Of course, last night, Francis Ngannou with the big win over Cain Velasquez, knocking him out in just 26 seconds. We've been talking for the last couple of weeks about Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier. It's all kinds of chatter going on at heavyweight. It's a bit of a mess of a situation. So let's talk to the former UFC heavyweight champion, the winningest heavyweight champion of all time, the pride of Ohio, Stipe Miocic. Look at that smile. Look at those dimples. Stipe, how are you?
Tell him, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us. So there's a lot going on. I'm just curious, did you watch the main event last night on ESPN?
Yeah, I did. I did watch it.
And were you shocked? What was your reaction seeing a 26-second knockout?
The heavyweight division, dude. Anything can happen. I mean, you know, I don't know if, you know, if France covered like a punch or if Kane's knee went out. I, you know, I don't know, but you know, I'd love to see that fight again. You know, I just, you know, unfortunately, you know, it didn't happen. But I just would love to see if those two fight again. You know, if Kane's knee didn't go out, or who knows? I don't know. Or did Ngannou come with a good punch? You know, it's hard to say.
Do you believe in the lucky punch theory? I personally don't believe it, and I feel like you guys train for this sort of thing. And yes, sometimes, you know, you throw a punch, it doesn't land where you intended to land, but I see a lot of fans getting all upset saying like, oh, he didn't really knock him out, his knee buckled. To me, it seemed like the punch led to the knee buckling, so I feel like Francis is not really getting the respect and credit that he deserves here.
Listen, he won that fight, so no, you can't take it away from him. He won that fight, knocked him out, you know, in 26 seconds. I mean, That's a good night. That's an easy night. Those are the best nights. Those are the nights we pray for. You know, I don't know. I mean, we all been there. I mean, trust me, I've been there. I know that. I mean, I feel like, you know, last fight happened, and, you know, I think it was a fluke, and, you know, that's why I'm trying to get that shot back with DC.
Yep. And we'll get to that in just a quick second, but I'm just curious, since you were the man who kind of started the mini spiral, if you will, for Francis, are you surprised at how he's rebounded? Because it seemed like after your fight, he turned into a different person, lacked confidence, couldn't pull the trigger against Derek Lewis. But now in his last two fights, it seems like the old Francis is back.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know, he's a young guy. He's hungry. He's getting better. But, you know, if we did fight again later on down the road, it would be the same outcome. I would win the fight.
Okay. So you have made it known very much that you want a rematch against Daniel Cormier. As we sit here and speak on this Monday, February 18th, where do things stand from your perspective?
I mean, if you look at it, there's no other matchup to make in the heavyweight division besides me and him. You know, I don't know why he told me that, you know, he just said if Brock doesn't able to fight, and, you know, I'll fight Stipe. And then I don't know where Brock's at. I think he's doing WrestleMania in April sometime. And is he even cleared?
That's ongoing.
I don't know. You should know better than me, man. You're a journalist.
Yes. I said it's ongoing.
Okay, I just want to make sure. I mean, okay. I don't know if you're hiding something. I mean, you always hide stuff.
No, me? I never. I'm an open book.
Oh, that's a lie.
You never text me back. I try to build rapport, texting. I get stonewalled from you left and right. I have to go through poor Jim Walter and bother him all the time.
That's his job.
Yeah, that is true. Okay, so what do you think? Do you think you're going to get it at this point, or are you starting to lose hope?
No, I'm definitely losing hope, man. I'm definitely going to get it. You know, I don't, one minute he says yes, and the next minute he says no, and then he tells me I should get a fight before him. And but he's trying to fight a guy. If he does fight Brock, he hasn't fought almost 3 years, hasn't fought anyone. He's been popped twice. I mean, I don't understand. Maybe he should get a shot, you know, a fight before he fights DC. I don't know.
Has the UFC tried to get you to come back and fight someone else? I had heard that they were trying to get you to fight at Madison Square Garden, maybe even against Kane back in November before he took that fight. Have they even tried to go in a different direction with you?
Well, I told him I'd fight DC, you know, Madison Square Garden. Everyone knows that. I've
yeah.
him multiple times. I mean, you know, offered the fight. He said no, and he took Lewis instead. You know, it's the only way you can do. You said you fight someone, you know, it was a short notice fight for me, too.
You put out this great video recently, and it was a side of you that I think a lot of us haven't, you know, seen in the past. You and your daughter, your family. The main message was, you know, he owes me the rematch, and I would do the same to him. Why do you feel like he owes you the rematch?
Well, I didn't have to take the fight. You know, I didn't have to do the super fight. I could have fought another heavyweight, the next contender. And you know, but it's what the fans wanted, and you know, I did. You know, I felt like that was a great matchup, and I could win the fight, and But, you know, if the shoe's on the foot, he'd be the same way, though. You know, it happened to him, he'd be like, hey, man, I want my shot back. Come on, let's go. You know, I mean, I, he's done it before, so not like anything different.
Right. I feel like maybe the message and the lesson in all this, look, there's no secret that at times when you were champion, you didn't see eye to eye with the UFC brass. And things were a little frosty at times. Do you feel like this is their way of maybe getting back at you by not giving you this immediate rematch?
I don't think of it that way, man. I'm thinking about, just, you know, staying positive, man. Positive vibes is all I care about.
Do you wish that you put maybe an immediate rematch? That's not really a thing in our sport. It's more of a thing in boxing. But do you think it's time that maybe, you know, long reigning champions such as yourself put rematch clauses in the contract so you don't have to go out and campaign for things like this?
Yeah, totally. No, I think so. I think so 100%. You know, it's just hard to say that because, like, you know, see guys that have never defended the belt and they get a rematch right away. And then, you know, defended it, you know, three times and, sitting here.
What was that last part?
I'm just sitting here.
Yes. You haven't fought since July. It's currently February. So to the best of my knowledge, that's around like 7 or so months. I believe you're injury free, right? You're 100% healthy, correct?
Yeah.
Are you starting to, you know, get a little antsy here? I mean, this is 7 months. Usually, no, you're not getting
here,
a little, man. You're good.
I'm good. Listen, I'm training every day, living life, having fun, and just, you know. Getting ready for when DC gives me a rematch.
Well, I saw that in that video that you're still training, you're going, but is it tough to train? Like, is it hard to find motivation when you don't know what exactly you're training for?
No, man, I train for my daughter, man.
Mm-hmm. And you are...
I love it. You know, I love being a father, and I just, you know, go there every day, and, you know, and know what I'm doing, and what I'm doing it for.
That was the best part of that video, to see how much you love your daughter and how much you want to provide for her. How has it changed you being a dad? And are you surprised at how much it has changed you?
Oh yeah, I knew it was going to change from the start. But I think it just, you know, makes you a better person. You know, it makes you slow down, enjoy everything, and not take the game so seriously.
Are you surprised by the changes, or were you expecting all of this?
No, I was expecting it. I just realized how selfish she was. You know, she had Peter and Burper and Chambers. but I love every second of it, man. Honestly, I do.
I feel like the best part of being a dad is it gives you balance and perspective. Like, it's not all, you joke about self. Like, I feel like we're selfish as human beings. And once you bring a kid into the world, you no longer can be selfish anymore. And I think that that's the best part of it all.
Oh, 100%. Honestly, there's no question. And, you know, that's what I said in the video. You know, I'm going to show it. And how many times you get knocked down, you just got to get up, dust yourself off, move forward, and, you know, come on ahead with your head on top.
Are you spending more time at the firehouse now that you're on this little hiatus as far as fighting?
No, same as usual.
Same schedule?
Worked last night.
So how many hours do you work a week?
It depends, 24 or 36.
Okay, so like last night's shift, how long was it?
12 hours.
12 hours, okay. Was it overnight or during the day?
Overnight.
Wow, so like what time to what time?
7:30 to 7:38.
Man, are you tired right now?
No.
So how did you watch the fight? You weren't out there saving lives on the streets of Cleveland?
No, we were lucky. It was a slow night. So
is there ever a time where it's 12 hours and you have absolutely nothing to do? Like, you've done nothing? No calls?
Oh, it's the worst. You got like cabin fever and, oh, it's the worst.
So in a weird way, sometimes you're actually hoping for it?
Yes, because it, you know, it kills the day.
Right,
you know,
right, right.
Not, not back to back, just keep going, but like, you know, call here and then call there and call here and just kind of brace up the slowness.
So behind the scenes, as far as getting this rematch against DC, because I'm sure that you've seen some of his public comments, he called you entitled, right? Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that.
What did you make of that?
That's funny. I mean, I don't understand his logic, but all right.
Well, what is being done behind the scenes to try? Because Dana White spoke to the media yesterday and said that Daniel has a booking. He didn't exactly say who it was, but it seems to me like they're going in the direction of Brock. What are you guys doing to try to reverse course here?
You'll find out, man. I'm doing whatever I got to do. My entitled is doing what it's got to do. Get that rematch.
Which is what, like, from a behind the scenes perspective, what are you guys doing?
What do you mean, like, behind the scenes? Like, I understand.
Well, it's one
like,
thing to put it out. Well, it's one thing to put it out there in the public, but, like, I know meetings go on. I know people have meetings.
Him doing all that stuff. He's taking care of it. We're trying to figure it all out. You know, there's a lot of things, and, you know, it's a lot. You know, it's going to take more than just a little conversation to talk about it.
Jim's doing a lot. Okay, and what happens if they do go in the direction of Brock Lesnar? How do you react to that?
Where am I reacting? Apparently, being a crybaby, so I'll probably be a crybaby some more.
But then, are you just never going to fight again? Or are you going to sit out?
No, I never say I'm going to fight again, but no, I'm not going to sit out.
Okay, so do you have a timeline? Like, if I don't get
no.
out? No. You're just,
no timeline.
You're just waiting to see what happens.
Yeah.
What if they come to you with, like, a Francis rematch? Are you interested in that?
Yeah, after I fight DC.
Okay. After you beat the champion, you'll defend the title against Francis again. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. But that's why I'm asking, like, at some point, something's got, like, if they say, look, DC's fighting Brock Lesnar next, now do you want to fight someone else, or are you just going to wait to...
That's what he said he wanted from the start, you know, but, I mean, I like I said before, like, I don't even know if Brock's even available. I mean, he's got WrestleMania, and then, like I said, I don't know if he's even been cleared, and then that whole debacle with USADA losing one of his tests or something like that. I have no idea.
Yeah. You don't trust him that he's actually going to show up to this fight.
I don't trust him. I hope he doesn't. You know, I wish nothing but the best for him, but I hope he doesn't show up.
Yeah, I'll say it. I don't trust. I mean, the history precedes you, right? I mean, I feel like something crazy might happen along the way here. I don't feel like this fight is actually ever going to happen.
Well, that's okay with me. I'm worried. I'll step right in.
Yeah. All right. So what a crazy situation here. Here you are. You're healthy. You're waiting. You're just awaiting the word of when you can fight for the belt again, the winningest heavyweight champion of all time.
Yeah, man. I mean, listen, you know, he got me that first round. For him, and it wasn't like he would beat me the brakes off me or anything like that. You know, like I was winning that fight, you know, he's caught with a punch, and if he feels that confident, do it again. See if he can do it again the first round.
I noticed in that video you said there's not a day that goes by that you don't think about that fight, that you think about every day. Does it consume you? Like, how often are you actually thinking about it on a daily basis?
All the time.
All the time. To the point, like, does it drive you crazy?
No.
Do you watch it a lot?
No, I've never seen it.
You've never
Maybe one time? I've seen clips or something like that, but I never watched the fight itself.
Really? You never actually sat down and watched it beginning to end? How come?
No need to. I lost.
Okay. But yet you're still always thinking about it.
Yep.
What's the biggest mistake that you think you made in that fight that you wouldn't do again?
I just got too close. I just didn't do what I was supposed to. You know, I didn't listen to my coaches. You know, I didn't keep my distance. And let him dirty box me. That's what he's good at. And we caught him with the right overhand right.
Did you get overconfident because you were doing so well early on?
Yeah, I think so.
Right. All right. 100%. So February 18th, 2019, you will say on the record you do believe that you will fight DC next.
Yeah. I mean, let's do it. April 13th, man. There's a, they don't have a headliner or a spot. Well, let's do it.
Yeah. You want to do it that quickly? That's in like less than 2 months.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Okay. And by the way, I think that you're one of the big winners from last night in a weird way, because I think Kane losing like removes a roadblock for you, if you know what I'm saying, because you already beat Francis. So I don't know if you looked at it from that perspective, but I actually think you come out looking very good and smelling very good after this.
Well, I'm trying to smell good, man.
Yes, that's right. I knew you were going to say something. I knew you were going to say something. By the way, Cavs are doing well this year. It's been a good year for them.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Well, I remember like you were making fun of me for being a Raptors guy, and now Raptors.
Well, you guys can never beat us in the playoffs, and then you're going to. We're not going to make it to the playoffs,
right? No, no, you'd be lucky.
Always next year.
Yeah, always next year. That's the Cleveland attitude I love. I love this positive attitude. Look at you, smiling, happy. Your father. You believe you will fight for the belt next. I like it. I think we could all learn from it. Stipe, great stuff. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
Stipe 316. DTA. Don't trust anyone. By the way, I want the old Steve. Can I get the old Steve Bay back on Twitter? Remember, you used to go on these Twitter rants. Maybe yeah, that'll get you. What happened?
I grew up.
That's it? You got too important for us little people?
He might come back out here soon. I mean, listen, I'm pretty witty, but I just sometimes it's exhausting sometimes trying to pick a fire, you know, trying to say something, and then you got to keep going with it, and then it's, you know, we'll see. You never know. I might come out in left field with something.
You changed, Stipe. Ever since you became champion, you went corporate on us. We need the old Stipe back.
Corporate, it's all about it's what we're doing in the world today. I was corporate.
All right. Well, just consider it, okay? Do me a favor.
I got you, babe.
Thank you, Stipe. All the best to you and your family. Appreciate it very much. There he is, the former UFC heavyweight champion, Stipe Miocic. Very, very eager to get his belt back. He has been campaigning for it, representing his firehouse. What a mensch. 12 hours last night at the firehouse. And watch the fight, and then here he is doing the show. Amazing guy. So, what are they going to do? I do believe that he was one of the big winners coming out of that event, because I think that if Cain would have won, they would have perhaps tried to do Cain in a number one contender fight, have DC fight Brock Lesnar, then DC maybe drops the belt, and then here comes Cain. But hey, now Francis just knocked Cain out. And again, I maintain Francis deserves all the credit for that victory. And now that roadblock is gone because Francis lost to Stipe Miocic back at UFC 220. My round of the year, by the way, the first round, I maintain a phenomenal round. The intrigue was at an all-time high. The tension was at an all-time high. I love that round. I actually just rewatched it not that long ago. So we'll see what happens. He mentioned April 13th, by the way. That's UFC 236. And as of right now, they have not announced a main event for it. They have not announced a location for it. They haven't announced any fights for it. But I think that they're zeroing in on something here. That's what the latest is. That card, what is it, February 18th? That card is April 13th. I had heard Abu Dhabi discussed. I had heard New York discussed. But as of right now, I'm not hearing any confirmation, any finalization of a venue, a location, a city, a main event, a co-main event, a title fight. But something's got to give. They're not canceling it. Don't worry about that. But something is, I think, going to happen in the next couple of days here. All right. In a matter of moments, we're going to be joined by one of the most influential, one of the most powerful managers in the sport, not just in MMA, but doing big things in the NFL, doing big things over in the NBA as well. One of the big power brokers, if you will, the head man over at Paradigm Sports Management, the man who helped broker the Mayweather-McGregor deal and deserves a lot of credit for that, the right-hand man for the likes of Conor McGregor, Tony Ferguson, Wonderboy Thompson, Chris Cyborg, the list goes on and on. In a matter of seconds, we're going to be joined by Audie Attar. After that, we are going to talk to one of his clients, Michael Venom Page, who had the big win over Paul Daly on Saturday in Connecticut. I believe Audie was there for that fight. After that, we'll be joined by the aforementioned Francis Ngannou, Santiago Ponzinibbio, still to come as well. Of course, the UFC strawweight queen, Rose Namajunas, still to come as well. Jimmy the Brute Crute, still to come as well. A lot going on the show. But for now, let's get to our next guest, the great Audie Attar, Mr. Power Broker himself. Very hard to get this man on the show. I mean, it's almost impossible. It's easier to get Donald Trump on the show these days than this man. He is that busy, but he's kind enough to be joining us right now on the program. Audie, how are you?
Ariel, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
No, it is a pleasure. Thank you so much, and congratulations to you and the team on all the success that you guys have had, not just with the fights itself, but all the deals that you guys are doing outside of the arenas, and we'll get to those in a second. And as far as one of those deals are concerned, I would think that the deal that you announced last week, as far as your partnership with Legend FC in Asia, would constitute as a big deal. I still can't quite understand, like, what's your involvement here, so please break this down for us. What are you doing with Legend?
Sure. You know, as you know, mixed martial arts is exploding on a global level. Congratulations to you and ESPN, obviously, on not only the new UFC deal, but on your new position with a new network. It's been exciting to watch from the New Year's countdown to last night's event. But the sport is exploding. And when we first got into the sport, late 2010, we really looked into the future. We weren't just looking at present day as it relates to to the sport's growing success. But we looked at where the sport was going, and we were very bullish on the fact that it was going to explode on a global level. And not only from the UFC, but you see Bellator's rise, and you see other promotions around the world growing in mind share. And then the consumer products industry exploding, the brands of fighters are exploding and now are reaching new heights. And we wanted to be at the forefront of that, not only growing our athletes' brands, but wanted to diversify into other areas from consumer products to content, digital technology, and now team leagues and promotions. So Legend Fighting Championship was one of the pioneers of Asian mixed martial arts. They had the likes previously of Robert Whittaker, current UFC 185 champ. You had Li Jingliang, which is our client. You had the Mongolian Wolf, which was the first Chinese fighter ever in the UFC. They all came from Legend. And so Legend was a really interesting opportunity that came from one of our partners, Matthew Kwok, Kwok Man Productions. They produced Monday Night Football and other major live sporting events. Matt came to us, led the original Legend team. Had a great success, first 11 shows, and then it ceased to exist. And so Matt came to me about trying to revive the brand, and our interest as a company, again, you know, we have multiple divisions and multiple businesses, but I looked at it as an opportunity to go back to the birthplace of martial arts, China, be a part of a brand that I thought was really, really, a really good brand, had mind share, did our own due diligence, talked to the fighters, even our own clients, right, that were in the promotion. And I thought it was such a great opportunity if we focused on China, because nobody's really just focusing on China right now. And I think China, the appetite's growing, the sport's exploding there and all over Asia, as well as the rest of the world, as I mentioned. So, I saw it as a great opportunity to put an all-star team together, and we are part of the founding board of Legend Fighting Championship, and we threw our first show in September in Guangzhou, and we have several other shows right now in the works in Macau, mainland. So exciting times, have a really strong team, have our team right now on the ground there, working tirelessly, and it's exciting to be a part of.
Now, when you say one of the board members, founding member, what does your... You know, what does your involvement entail? Because, you know, as we know, you represent fighters, you work with fighters. Is it possible that this could be a little tricky for you because you're on kind of both sides of the fence?
We don't represent any of the fighters in Legend right now. Our focus as a founding board member is to really help architect, you know, the strategy and build the local operational team, the day-to-day team, the event team, and put together a first-class package that allows all the up-and-coming fighters, and they're growing by the numbers in China, the opportunity to showcase their skills on a very large stage that allows them to continue to move up the ranks and allows them to develop their career, but at the same time, make a career for themselves in mixed martial arts. And so we're committed to making sure we create an environment where the fighters are getting every tool they need to compete, to develop as not only an athlete, but also as a brand, and to grow their careers. And I think that there's a void in the Chinese market of someone really just focusing on that market and delivering consistency into that market specifically. And I think that our collective ownership group, and as well as our staff, we're all committed to delivering the highest level product and promotion possible in China.
So is one championship on notice? Are you coming after them?
Look, I have respect for everybody. I've never been the type of guy that goes out there and puts anybody down, whether it's from our management business or any other businesses that we're involved in. One is, I think, has changed their strategy. It appears that they're going more global now, having signed recently some UFC veterans. And I think that's their strategy. And we're sticking to ours. We're focusing on what our strategy is. And we welcome the competition. I think competition is good for the market. I think competition is good for every promotion. Particularly, it's great for every fighter. I think to have options is a really good thing. And I think the fans are the ones that are going to ultimately dictate which option they like. And for us, we're just focused on China. So I think that there's room for everybody to compete and to execute their own respective strategies.
By the way, here in the U.S. and more importantly in China, how can people watch Legend?
Right now, we have distribution deals set executed throughout mainland China and Asia, from Fox Sports Asia to CCTV to GDTV to Tencent. But we have several other broadcast partners in and around mainland China and Asia, And we even have OSN in the Middle East. So I think it's growing in terms of the interest. And I think that there could be an opportunity where, you know, we sign a deal here in North America for distribution rights, just to make sure we continue to maximize the opportunity and the mindshare of the Legend brand.
Okay. Obviously, that's one of the things that you're working on. I'm assuming Conor McGregor's next fight is another thing that you are working on. First, I just want to ask you, he got the suspension from Nevada, 6 months. He got the fine. Are you okay with how this all went down?
Look, at the end of the day, I think Nevada had to do what they had to do. I think Conor's handled himself in the situation and the aftermath, you know, really in an honorable way. They had to levy a suspension that they thought was fair. We cooperated the entire time, and now that's behind us. So I think the one thing that's still outstanding, which doesn't make sense, is, you know, our other client, Dylan Danis. I think he's someone that was attacked, and then, you know, obviously people tried to smear his name, saying he said some racial remarks. I mean, we've seen the video, we've heard the audio. He did no such thing. And I think that process is hopefully coming to an end at the same time, because, you know, you see other people who actually threw punches are currently active. But Dylan, I think, deserves the opportunity to get back there, earn a living, fight for Bellator, who have been chomping at the bit to getting him back in the cage. So we'll see kind of how that plays out. But at the end of the day, we always try to respect the due process in any situation that we're in, and we move forward. That's it.
So Conor's suspension is up in April. For a minute there, it seemed like maybe a rematch against Dustin Poirier would be next. Now it seems like Cowboy Cerrone has moved to the forefront. There was a little talk of Max Holloway. He's going on Twitter and talking about Nate Diaz and Anderson Silva. Who is Conor going to fight next? What could you tell us?
He's training constantly. So obviously, you know, he's staying ready right now. But who do you think? Let me ask you a question, because obviously you're kind of in tune with what the fans want. I'm interested to hear kind of what you think about the situation.
I mean, I think Conor versus anyone is a headliner. I don't think that you need a belt. I think that if he's in a non-title fight and you're putting him in a co-main event or something like that, that's crazy. I think he's, quite frankly, bigger than any title. I would love to see the Max Holloway rematch, because he's a champion moving up. I think Max is doing very well as of late, and it's a competitive fight. I can understand why the Cerrone fight is of interest as well. I said last week, he just needs a win. It's a must-win situation, because he has not, you know, won since the win over Eddie Alvarez. So I think that that's the direction. But it doesn't matter what I think, Adi. You're the guy making the deals. So who's atop the leaderboard right now? Who's in first place? What are you thinking?
It always matters what you think and what the fans think. And I can tell you that it ultimately matters on my side what my client thinks, right?
Right.
So right now I think we're focused. I think, you know, we got past the Nevada due process, and we're serving out a suspension. But he's very busy right now. He has a thriving empire that we're growing, and he's focused on his training. He's focused on his family, and we'll see. I mean, I think there's little talks happening right now, but nothing imminent. But there's definitely, I can tell you one thing: he's watching, he's listening, he's in tune. As you can see, he's tweeting during the fights. He gets excited. He loves the sport. He lives for it. You know, and I think it's one of those things where you've named out some potential opponents. I think they all have some merit to consider. But ultimately, we'll see kind of where Conor decides. Because you're right, it doesn't matter who he fights. He is the biggest thing in this sport, and I can tell you in seeing how this sport has exploded globally and being involved in different aspects of the sport and meeting with the leaders of different organizations, they all pay that respect to Conor McGregor. And I think that it's rightfully due, right? I think numbers don't lie, and he's done great for the sport, great for all fighters. And ultimately, when the history books are written, people will start thanking him a little bit more than they do right now.
Can you tell us time frame for when he might return?
Don't know. We'll
okay.
see.
All right.
Don't know, really. At the end of the day, I think that right now he's just staying focused and focusing on what we have going on. But he's training. I mean, I think you see that in his social media activity. He's training. So it's not like where he's just sitting on the sidelines and not thinking about fighting. He loves it, like I said. So we'll see. We'll see how this all plays out.
Any report, though, that there's a done deal as far as his next fight is inaccurate at this time? Is that what you're saying, essentially?
Inaccurate.
Okay. Want to ask you about Tony Ferguson, who I think a lot of people are curious to see what he does next. He was the interim champion, think he was falsely stripped of that belt. And you see,
I think both Conor and him were falsely stripped of the belt. Don't forget, they were both stripped.
Right.
At the same time, the bell rang against two guys that hadn't even held the belt. So, yes, you're right. I agree with you on that.
And so, some talk about his next fight came up late last week with Max Holloway posting a thing on Wikipedia, and we know that there was some talk of maybe booking them together in January. Will he fight Max Holloway next, as soon as perhaps April 13th? Because I know that they're looking for a main event for that card.
We will see. There's been the Poirier rumors out there about Tony, and now the Holloway rumor. I mean, Holloway's been trolling everybody on different things. So, you know, you can't hate on a guy trying to make some money. So. But ultimately, I think we'll see. I think there's discussions that are starting. And I'm waiting to get with Tony and to discuss the different opportunities and options that exist. And we'll go from there.
If Khabib doesn't fight for a year, if he's out till November, does Tony's next fight have to be for a belt if he's fighting before that?
Well, that's a good question, right? Because precedent's been all over the place. So if Khabib is suspended for a year, what happens to the belt?
Right.
So you just mentioned a scenario where two guys are stripped. And some of them under circumstances that were, you know, really a workplace hazard in the case of Tony Ferguson's injury, right? And then how fast he came back from that injury. So the question is, what happens to the belt? I think that's the first question. And then the answer that Tony will give will be based on that. The answer that Conor will give will be based on that, right? So, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening right now, and it's really everybody's waiting to see what the UFC does.
One of your big clients, Michael Venom Page, with a win on Saturday, Wonderboy Thompson coming back. But last client I want to just ask you about, and Wonderboy's fighting Anthony Pettis in March. I just wanted to ask you about Chris Cyborg, because my understanding is
before we get to that.
Yeah.
Really proud of MVP. Losing his father, going through what he's gone through, staying focused. And then fighting Paul Daly, who everybody thought was going to be a striking match between the two, to stay focused, stay patient, don't panic in grappling situations, and really outpointed him. I'm really proud of Michael for the way he handled this fight and what he's dealing to. And condolences to him and his family for that loss. And it's never easy to go through a tragic loss, losing a family member, but then to turn around and have to fight a first round of a tournament where you have $1 million on the line too. That's a lot of pressure. And I'm just so proud of him and his team, London Shoe Fighters. You know, it was great to see.
Well said. Yeah, I echo those sentiments 100%. I was just curious about Chris because we last saw her in December. I know the contract is coming up. Is she going to re-sign with the UFC? Is she going to fight before March and try to sneak in that last fight? What could you tell us about her status?
We're waiting. We haven't received any official fight offer. I mean, she'd love to fight in her hometown. We've had, you know, some soft discussions about the next fight and about the future. And she'd love to fight for the UFC. Obviously, Chris Cyborg, you know, I don't care what anybody says about her. She is one of the biggest draws in MMA. And that's fact. And when you look at the numbers, right? And she's exciting to watch. And even that last fight, she went in there and she didn't fight her fight and she got caught, but it was still exciting to watch. And she's going to come back with a vengeance and she hopes to do it in her hometown. And then we'll see what the future holds. I can tell you that there's no question. Just like, you know, I was mentioning about Conor, when you're able to see the world of MMA and talk to the different stakeholders and the various levels of the business, like I'm fortunate enough to be able to do, you see what the sentiment and the mind share is, not only about, you know, one particular athlete, but all the athletes and all the brands and all the things that we're involved with at Paradigm. And I can tell you, Chris Cyborg is another name that has a lot of mindshare, a lot of value throughout the MMA community globally. So we'll see. Hopes are that we could get a new deal done with the UFC, but ultimately, I think time will tell whether that's achievable or not.
Okay, so clearly we've established so much going on in your life, the legend deal, all these clients, proper whiskey showing up everywhere. You're at the Super Bowl. I can't even believe that you have time for us here. You're hobnobbing with the likes of Robert Kraft and all these celebrities. There's the August McGregor line that just came out, right? The suits, the shirts. Is that actually out there? Like, if I want to rock an August McGregor suit on SportsCenter, is that a thing that I could do?
Well, first of all, we got to get you geared up. So I'm going to call the team when we get off.
Well, thank you.
Make sure you have a case of Proper 12. Irish whiskey sent to your office.
Oh, thank you.
And I want to see it. I want to see it with the little bobbleheads in the back. You know, I don't know if you got that. Then you got a fancy studio now. I don't know if they even exist anymore. But then in terms of August McGregor, yeah, that launched. I mean, we're launched now digitally through our e-commerce platform. And we just released our second drop. And there'll be, you know, every month there's going to be surprises for fans and consumers to enjoy. And David Heil and Conor McGregor came together. David August and Conor McGregor obviously came together and created August McGregor. And it's an amazing suit line. And there's some lifestyle products as well that are available and affordable to everybody. I think I'm excited about those projects that we helped launch and we're a part of, you know, because Proper 12 has really crushed every record that exists in the spirits industry, which has been around for a long time. And shout out to our Proper Whiskey team and our partner, Ken Austin. It's been great to build this brand. And Conor has really been involved in every aspect. Everybody thinks that he's just endorsed. No, he's the founding chairman, right? And so at the end of the day, this has been an exciting ride. But for us to now cross over into different industries and set records there has been exciting. And then in terms of August McGregor, send me your sizes.
Okay.
Let's get your suit. Let's make sure you wear it on one of your shows. For
all right.
Sure.
Fair enough. Audie, congrats to you and the team on everything that's going on. Congrats on the Legend deal as well. I'm looking forward to seeing how that grows, especially in that market of all places. Continued success. And when you have some news to break regarding one of those clients we just spoke about, you're always welcome back on the program.
I appreciate it, Ariel. Congratulations to you and the entire team as well. It's yet another accomplishment in the story and the history of MMA. So congratulations to you guys. It's an honor to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Audie. All the best to you guys. We'll talk to you soon. There he is, Audie Attar, head man over at Paradigm Sports Management, doing so many big things. Legend, as we just talked about, Conor. The list goes on and on. All right. Now, let's move along to our next guest. He was the star of last night's show. Around like 13 hours ago, he knocked out Cain Velasquez in 26 seconds. He was the underdog. No one gave him a shot. They thought that he was going in there to get ragdoll like Ben Rothwell at UFC 104. He walked into the Valley of the Sun, Phoenix, Arizona, against their hometown guy, and he knocked out Cain Velasquez in 26 seconds. And to all you people that are saying he got lucky, that it was an injury, that his punch did not lead to the injury, shame on you. Give this man his credit. Le Predateur, Francis Ngannou, up next on the program. Francis, félicitations, mon ami.
Merci, Ariel. Merci beaucoup. Comment ça va?
Oh, ça va très bien. I'm assuming super. It's even more bien pour toi because of what you did last night in Phoenix. Wow. What has it been like? 13 hours ago, you did that to the former heavyweight champion. What is your life like now?
Well, it's the same, you know. it was a great performance, and then it was a good fight. Now the pressure dropped down, but you know, life has to move on. We have to move on.
So not a lot happened in that fight. Obviously, it just lasted 26 seconds. But my partner Chael Sonnen yesterday told me that he was surprised how much Cain was trying to strike with you early on. He thought that he would go straight to the wrestling. Were you surprised as well?
Not really, because he didn't take so long, like in all the 28 seconds that the fight went, he strike for like few seconds, and then attack the takedown, because he get caught on the takedown action.
Okay, and so when did you start to realize that he was in trouble? Because like I said, it seems like people are trying to discredit you. Could you tell us the moment that you landed a punch and you thought, okay, I got this guy?
No, when he fell, you know, when he fell down, I saw he didn't move. There wasn't a reaction for like 1 or 2 seconds, but then I just want to secure the victory. I shoot some punch and the referee stopped the fight.
Have you seen people say that like, oh, that wasn't a knockout, that he injured his knee, that's the only reason why the fight ended? Have you seen this chatter, and if so, what do you think of it?
You know, there were a lot of unhappy people yesterday with that fight, you know, so they always want to find something to say. But what get his knee buggered, it was a shot under his chin, so not doesn't matter what they say, it's clear. There is the video out there, and they can check out of it.
So your belief is that your punch led to him falling like that awkwardly, and it wasn't just him, you know, moving.
No, my punch landed before his knee. Right. So he was a knockout. He just fell on his knee, but his knee didn't have a problem at all.
Right. Does it bother you?
No, it didn't. He didn't bother me because I know that I get it clear. He was very clear. I mean, and so if someone refused to see it, that's the problem, you know.
But I was curious if it bothered you that people weren't giving you the credit that you deserve.
Well, what people want to do is not longer my concern. I told you that before.
When you were envisioning this fight, Francis, did you think that it could end that quickly?
No, not at all.
What did you think?
I thought I'm going to take the first round to analyze his game, and then before strike in the second round, maybe, you know, then he just did so fast.
I said this at the beginning of the show, Francis. I'm in awe of what you've done in your career, not just because you're knocking these guys out, but because we all deal with, you know, self-confidence issues and self, you know, like self-doubt. And after what you did or maybe didn't do in July against Derek Lewis, to come back the way you've come back against Curtis Blaydes and now Cain Velasquez is nothing short of amazing. Like, what you have been able to do for your career and for your mind is just amazing. Like, now I feel like all of that is behind you. Have you officially moved on from all of that? I feel like your confidence now is back to where it was after the Overeem fight.
Yes, as I said before, all that is behind me. The old Francis, the old story is behind. This is I reborn. This is a new Francis, you know. This is a new Francis. I redefine my new goals in life, you know, find my purpose, and then trying to find my balance between a fight and my personal life, you know. I love this business, but it's just a fight. It's just a profession. It's not. I still have some life apart of it, you know, that I have to run that as well. I have to be happy in my life too, you know. So, yes, and as I said before, I went there to have fun, and then I accept that everything could happen, you know. It wasn't like I wanted the victory, but I accept that everything could happen in the fight, like for everyone, you know. That happened to him. We all know what he's capable of. We all know how great he is. So,
Francis, why didn't you say in the cage, hey, I thought you were going to take the mic. You're such a nice guy, but you should have said, hey, Daniel Cormier, wherever you are, I just did that to your friend. You're next. And then walk away. That would have gotten you the title shot.
No, I don't think I need that to say that to get a title shot. And then Daniel called me. I don't know if you want to fight again or not. You know, well, I don't know where is the heavyweight title position, you know, because he's talking about retirement. They have talking about fight, you know. No real news about the title right now. So I just want to fight for the title. I don't know if it will be an interim or a challenge again, DC. But however, I want to fight for the title.
Okay, so did you tell this to Dana White? Like, did you have a conversation with him backstage after the event? Did you give him?
No.
No, you didn't have a conversation. No. So do you?
Not at all.
Because I heard him say to the media that Daniel Cormier has other plans, and it didn't seem like he came out and said, yes, Francis Ngannou is going to fight for the belt next. So do you think that you're going to get the title shot?
I don't know. Once again, it's up to the executive. You know, we don't have a hand on it. They decide everything. But what I think is I deserve it.
But do you think you'll get it? What do you think?
Oh, I can't tell you, man. Okay. It's about the UFC. I cannot tell you.
I spoke to Daniel Cormier after the fight, and he said, look, this isn't about me. If they want me to go in that direction, we could talk about it. I didn't hear Francis say my name afterwards. This was, you know, immediately after the fight, but he told me that I won't fight Francis Ngannou. I will beat Francis Ngannou. He seemed very confident in the idea of fighting you. So that's what Daniel Cormier said to me after the fight.
Yes, he has to be confident. That's good for him.
Are you interested if they say, look, we're going to do the Brock Lesnar DC fight, but we want you to fight Stipe Miocic again? Are you interested in doing that fight again?
So, there are options.
Say that again, sorry.
I say there are options.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like I have an option, you know.
But is that a fight that you'd like to get back?
Yes, sure. If I have an option, I would like to fight for the belt.
Of course. Next.
Yes, next.
And by the way, I just have to say, the outfit that you wore at the media day, I know this is before the fight, but I'm still in awe of that. Could you tell us, you know, how you put that all together? See, I love when you do that sort of thing. I was the one who said, I think it was after the Overeem fight when you showed up in a traditional outfit like that. I thought, oh, every time Francis does media, he needs to dress that way. And then you brought it back for this fight. Why did you bring it back? And tell us if there was any symbolism behind it.
No, this one was something different. It was very, very traditional, you know. It was a noble outfit in Africa. Then, you know, I just wanted to let the USA know that they also have an African fighter in their roster, and they can also think about to put Africa on the map.
Do you think that they'll have the event in Africa this year? You've been talking about it, and especially now after the win, I feel like it increases the chances. Have they told you anything more about that? And if so, where in Africa?
I don't talk. I haven't talked with no one about it. But yes, I think they can have one this year. Maybe in Cameroon, like right now.
Wow.
We were preparing for the African Cup of Nations, and we didn't have it, but we have a stadium, everything for having event there. We have hotels who has fueled, everything is ready there. So we're going to have some in Cameroon and then in Nigeria. Then after, we're going to move on and see where you.
Are you really trying to, I actually heard that Coming to America 2 is a thing. Are you really trying to get into that movie? Is that an actual real thing that's happening here?
No.
That's just a joke?
What I'm trying to do. I didn't know exactly that it's coming out. Then after my outfit on media day, people just, that's when I heard it. And so I said, yes, I'm Coming to America 2 is coming out next year, but it wasn't on purpose.
Have you ever seen the movie?
Yes, I saw it.
Did you like it?
Back in the day, I was still in Cameroon. Yes, it was a funny movie. I like it. I watched that movie several times.
But did you watch it in English or French?
No, in French.
Ah, oh, it's not the same. Now you got. Now that you speak English fluently, you got to watch it in English. It's a totally different experience. The translation doesn't translate.
That's true. That's true.
So maybe now in your downtime in Phoenix, and you're still in Phoenix, correct?
Yes, I'm in Phoenix.
So what are you doing now? Are you going to go back home to Cameroon? You're going to go to Vegas? Where are you going? You have so many different homes: France, Africa.
Yes, you know, I want to stay. I'm not planning to go back in Africa, but at some point I feel like I need to, because I have to go on that gym. I have to go figure out. It's just a new way to start, and then people there, they don't have a lot of experience how to do this, so I still have to put things together. But I would like to stay a little bit, maybe until my next fight.
Okay, and when you have a fight like that that just lasts 26 seconds and it's such a big deal and you train several weeks for it, what is it like afterwards when you go into the locker room? Like, do you still feel like you have a lot of adrenaline that you want to get out? Are you feeling in a weird way like a little unfulfilled because you weren't in a fight where you got to fight a little longer, or is that the perfect kind of fight for you?
You just feel happy. You feel happy for sure because you get the win, because at the end of the day, that's what you want. That's what you were looking for. And then sometimes you can have like full feeling, you know, basically like some fight so short, you're like, okay, I would like to do like 1-2 round and then show more, but you never know. You can't have a chance and then let him go because you want to show something. No, just get it.
Did you have a chance at all in this past week to this is a story that I keep thinking about because it seemed like he was very much behind you, to clear the air with Dana White? Have you guys ever sat down yet to talk about maybe the misunderstandings of last year?
Okay, so I haven't talked to Dana White since 1 year ago, maybe more.
How is this possible? This makes no sense.
It makes sense.
It makes sense?
Yes.
Why? How?
Well, because I haven't talked to him. We are not calling each other, so.
You don't care? You're not worried about
it? Yes. I mean, what that would change what?
No, maybe a handshake, good job, congratulations, just something small like that.
I don't know.
Okay, I'm going to work on it, Francis. I'm going to get this done. He likes me very much. I don't know if you know this.
I don't think it's what you should say.
But say it again. Say that part again.
I don't think that's what you should say.
No. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to leave it alone.
Yes, because I think he doesn't like you too.
Yes.
He doesn't like you too.
No, you're 100% right. I think it's something about the French people, maybe. I think I'm going to start that rumor that it's a French thing, you know?
Well, you know, I'm just here for fight. I'm just here for my business to have fun.
And what a fight it was.
Everything go.
And by the way, before I let you go, is it true that you spoke to Kane afterwards, that he said that, you know, if you need any help with your foundation back home, that he would be happy to help you? Is that true?
Yes, that's true. He told me that next time that I have to go to Africa, I should let him know. So if he can bring some help, like last year he was in Senegal and then people was amazing there. And then, you know, he would like to go back there and help. No,
that's amazing. What a guy. Well, congratulations to you, Francis. What a performance. And again, to anyone who's trying to discredit this man and saying that he didn't knock out Cain Velasquez, you're 100% wrong. You couldn't be wrong. And honestly, Francis, I went on TV and talked about it, and people were like, what are you talking? I was blown away by the reaction. I can't believe that people are seeing this any other way.
No, I think they should just move their sunglasses. He blamed them a little bit to see exactly what happened, because the video is out there all over. So
it's very clear what happened, in my opinion. So we'll see. We'll see if you get that credit for me. You are getting that credit. Amazing win, 26-second victory, the 12th fastest finish in UFC heavyweight history. You are back, my friend. It's good to have you back. Congratulations, and thank you for doing this again just like 13 hours after the fight. I really appreciate it, Francis. Very happy for you. Congratulations. Enjoy the win.
Thank you, Ari. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Avec grand plaisir. Merci, Francis. Le prédateur. Yes, à la prochaine. 100%. There he is, Francis Ngannou. He is an unbelievable force, one of the hardest hitters in the history of the sport. An absolute, I mean, the guy has dynamite in his hands, and you use cliches like that, but it's just unbelievable what he's able to do to some of the toughest men. I mean, Curtis Blaydes was on some kind of roll. Cain Velasquez was on some kind of roll. I mean, he hadn't fought since UFC 200, but he looked so good against Travis Brown and still one of the greatest ever. And for him to do that to Cain is just amazing. Imagine if you were someone who... I think it was my colleague Dave Doyle who said this. Imagine you were someone who has just seen two Cain Velasquez fights, and it was the first UFC on Fox event and this first UFC on ESPN event. Imagine what you probably think of Cain Velasquez, who doesn't have, you know, the impressive physique, who doesn't have, you know, the look, if you will. If you look at Francis, you look at Cain, you're probably thinking, if you don't know anything about this sport, oh, of course, that guy's the former champion. In the end, it's really Cain. But what Francis has been able to do, how he's been able to turn his career around, nothing short of amazing. I can't believe. And I know for the next week, all I'm going to get are crazy people on Instagram and Twitter telling me about how it was the knee and they've lost all respect for me and you've changed and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's like I watched it. I watched it on my phone. I watched it on TV. I went back to my phone and I'm like, did I miss something here? Like, am I not seeing this punch? Now, it's unfortunate. Now, if you're trying to say that the punch led to his knee buckling and then that led to his further demise, then I can understand where you're coming from. But for people to just say like, oh, he like stubbed his knee and that's the only reason why he went down. And in fact, no punches landed. I've seen the no punches landed one too, which is just absolutely mind numbing to me. No punches landed? What are you talking about? No punches landed. I mean, the fight is 26 seconds. Just go back and watch it. Many punches landed. It's unfortunate for Kane. It's shocking. No one saw this coming. But, I mean, that's just what happened. He may have been rocked, and as a result, his knee buckled. That's a thing. And as I said at the top of the show, Javier Mendez, his head coach, told me that they are awaiting the results of the MRI to see what exactly happened. But that is very much a thing that happened. He got rocked. As a result, he may have lost his footing. As a result, he may have, you know, turned the wrong way. He may have landed the wrong way as he was falling down. Then the knee happened, but as a result of the damage inflicted by Francis Ngannou, and then there was more damage on the ground. So I don't understand why this is controversial. I don't understand why it's a talking point. You guys say that I'm the one who creates all this drama. Holy moly. Chael and I did our thing. It was a hostile takeover. It was the new nose world order, if you will. And we're on SportsCenter, and I think that we're doing great, and everyone's loving the coverage and all this stuff. And then I go on social media, and everyone's like, I can't believe that you did that. What? I can't believe you said that. I can't believe you called it a knockout. What's wrong with you people? It was a knockout. Relax. All right. Matter of Moments. We're going to be joined by Michael Venom Page, coming off that big win over Paul Daly this weekend. So the grudge match, at least for now, has been settled. Page wins a very close fight, won the fight via decision, and now he moves on to the next round of the tournament, May 11th in Rosemont, Illinois, the Allstate Arena. That's going to be a busy night in MMA because it's that event and it's also UFC and Curitiba. I broke the news last week that the main event for that card is going to be Michael Chandler against Patricio Pitbull. So the 145 champion, Patricio Pitbull, is moving up from 145 to go challenge for the 155-pound title. And he can be just the second fighter in Bellator history to hold two belts at the same time. The other, of course, Ryan Bader, who just did it when he defeated Fedor Emelianenko back in January. But as you may know, they have been going back and forth for quite some time. Chandler beat Patricky Pitbull, Patricio's older brother, twice. And 3 years ago, a little less than 3 years ago, he knocked him out in Missouri and then jumped on top of the cage and they were pointing at each other and all this stuff was going on between them. And now they're actually going to settle the score. I mean, this is a fight that has been brewing on social media. You'll recall on the old show, we actually had them on the show at the same time going back and forth. So they got the fight done. So that's happening May 11th. Page and Lima also happening on that card. AJ McKee against Pat Curran, the former Bellator featherweight champion. A big step up for AJ McKee, who's undefeated, one of their rising stars. And also on that card, the return of Jack Swagger, a.k.a. Jake Hager. No opponent for him just yet. But I did see on Saturday, Tyrell Fortune went on the microphone after his win and called out Mr. Jack Swagger, a.k.a. Jake Hager. It's a little confusing because it should really be Jake Hager, a.k.a. Jack Swagger, right? I still don't really know what to call him because I think he wants to be known as Jack Swagger, even though his real name is Jake Hager. In any event, I don't think that fight is going to happen because Tyrell Fortune is, I think, like 14 years younger than him and has been fighting for a long time. But way to call your shot, Tyrell Fortune. So, like I said, Matter Moments, we're going to be joined by Michael Page. After that, we're going to be joined by Aljamain, although the clock is ticking here because we also have, Yes. Corporate Jake loves the word efforting. That's his new word. I mean, he says it like 10 times a day, which is a, it's an industry standard word as the voice of God is telling me. That's another member of the squad. I think she just likes to be known as the voice of God. As you may have heard her on Ariel and the Bad Guy, but it's actually not a real word, by the way. Like efforting is not an actual word. That's not a verb. But it's a TV word. It's a TV word. So here's the situation. I have Aljamain Sterling asking me if we're calling him because he's, I think, set to go on in a minute. So if we can't connect with Paige, perhaps we can, unless we've connected with him, we can move him to a different time. You know, you have the fancy set, you have the trinkets, but at the end of the day, it's still the same old show. It's live, it's raw, it's in living color, but this is the beauty of not having any commercial breaks. You get to see the nipple of the show exposed. It all happens. It all happens in front of you. So that would be my suggestion, unless you want to call the audible and effort that, Corporate Jake. Sure, I'll promote this weekend as my Canadian flag just goes down. So Aljo is, don't test me. Aljo is actually sending me threats on text message right now. He says, I don't just wrestle anymore. Don't test me, Ariel. What are you talking about? I didn't, what is going on right now? What's happening? Aljo's very upset. See? Now I have to feel the wrath of the Funkmaster who just had that big win over Jimmy Rivera. He settled his own feud. I don't know what's going on. He settled his own feud. Now he's all fired up. Let's see. Okay, I will connect. I will make that happen. But in a matter of moments, we're going to be joined by Aljamain Sterling, who had the big win over Jimmy Rivera in Phoenix. Another great performance on that card. And this is a Northeast rivalry that played out in Phoenix, of all places. And for Aljamain Sterling, again, we've talked to this about him in the last couple times he's been on the show. You know, you always wonder how a fighter is going to rebound from getting knocked out for the first time. And he got knocked out by Marlon Moraes, and then he rebounded with now three straight victories, great performances against really tough guys. First, it was Brett Johns, the unanimous decision victory, just to get the ball rolling, just to get the mojo going a little bit, just to get the juices flowing, if you will. And then it was Cody Stamann back at UFC 228. And then it was a hard-fought victory over Jimmy Rivera, one of the very best bantamweights in the world, this past weekend in Phoenix. So now he's won his last three in a row. He's 17-3. And I know after the fight, he talked about potentially running it back with Marlon. Top of the bantamweight division, still somewhat unclear. It seems that the direction that they're going in is Henry Cejudo versus TJ at 135, perhaps around the summertime, maybe even a little sooner, actually. I've heard conflicting things. But it seems like that fight is going to happen, and that they're slowly, as I've said on previous episodes, slowly phasing out the 125ers, unfortunately. You see Henry Cejudo at that show last night? Yes, I know it was in Phoenix. Yes, I know the Bella twins weren't by his side. Nikki Bella in particular. Didn't seem like that panned out, unfortunately. I tried. I really did try. I tried my best. Like, I really put myself out there for him. Perhaps in hindsight, some of the responses weren't the best. But in any event, he got a great pop from the crowd. Did you hear the pop from the crowd? The crowd loved him. The crowd absolutely loved him. Like, he is a star. There is no doubt about that. He is an absolute star. And so they seem to be giving him that shot. But now you have this situation where Marlon is on standby. Marlon's already fought Aljo, so I don't know if they're going to run that one back, especially because it ended in a knockout. So I don't really know what they're going to do with those guys. Do you make them wait? I saw out of the corner of my eye that Aljo was there, and then I saw him disappear. He ran to get headphones. I mean, really. First, he hates that we're keeping him waiting, and they didn't have his headphones. Oh, here is New York Rick popping up, who like hardly does anything for our show, chiming in with his own little comments. Thank you, New York Rick, for that. All right, so Aljo Sterling coming up, and I'm very excited to talk to Rose Namajunas, top of the hour. That's going to be very exciting. We have not talked to her in quite some time. It has been, what has it been, like 7 months since we talked to her. Last time she was on the show was end of June, so I'm looking forward to that. Some good news while we wait for Mr. Sterling. Robert Whittaker has flown home. He has been discharged. Of course, had to pull out of 234 due to the collapsed bowel and internal hernia. I reported last week that he was discharged. Yesterday, he flew home to Sydney, so he is on the comeback trail, if you will, and still no word as to what they're going to do with not only him, his belt, but Adesanya Gaslam. I feel like we're going in the direction of Adesanya Gaslam right now. That's what my spider senses are telling me, but still not quite 100% set on that. Perhaps wanting to see how Whittaker was feeling. But the best news is that he is feeling good, that he has flown home, and that all is well for Robert Whittaker. So hopefully he makes a quick recovery. I was, I can't imagine being, I've been in a hospital for a week or so for something way less severe. Can't imagine going through what he went through. I see Aljo at the corner of my eye popping in and out. Let's just do phone if we can't connect on Skype because, there's a bit of a log jam. If you guys want me to go to 5 o'clock like the old days, I'm more than happy to do that. But then I get, you know, then I get all the people coming down on me like I'm some sort of renegade for going a little long. So, you know, I get all kinds of hate. Oh, you go too long. You talk too much. You book too many guests, all kinds of stuff, all kinds of grief. When all I'm trying to do is provide for the fans, trying to provide a service for them. Also, congratulations to Artem Lobov, who signed that 3-fight deal, 6-figure deal with Bare Knuckle FC. He's going to be fighting Jason Knight in April. So congrats to the GOAT, Artem Lobov. All right, he is ready. The big shot is ready. The superstar is ready. Let's say hello to Aljamain Sterling, who's joining us in Phoenix, coming off that big win. Aljo, how are you?
Doing good, man. All I can say is top five, top five, top five.
What's happening? Are you mad at me? What's going on? I feel a little tension via the text.
Just breaking your balls.
Okay. Can I just say something? Your beard is phenomenal right now. Wow. Are we really growing this out?
You know what? I almost cut it the day of the fight.
What?
I was in a crossroads. I'm like, the last time I wore a beard, I lost. I lost to Marlon Moraes. And I was like, you know what? I don't believe in superstitions. I'm going to keep it. And good thing I kept it.
It looks phenomenal. Now, are we letting this thing grow?
I think so. I was trying to see how long I could get it before the fight, but I mean, it's been coming in pretty nice. My girlfriend likes it, so
that's most important.
It's looking good so far.
Yes, and you look good in that fight. Are you happy with the body of work? Are you? I know this was a fight that was many years in the making. You probably thought about fighting this guy for quite some time. Are you happy with everything that you did?
100%. The one thing I will say, I did wish I got I was able to get a takedown. I really think if I got him down early in that first round, I would have choked his ass out. But, and he did his homework. I remember I put that tweet out when his teammate fought Damian Maia. He got on his back, took him down right away, choked him out in the first round, like 2 minutes. I thought I was going to do the same exact thing. And once I got in on his leg that easily, I was like, oh, dude, this is about to happen. First round finish. Bingo. Yahtzee. But, he did good, man. He did good. He was really strong. Did his homework. And, I think it forced me to show my stand-up a lot more. So now people can't say – I mean, I know people were kind of like booing in the beginning because we're both pressing the action to try to keep the fight standing, get the fight to the ground. But that's what happens when we have two high-level guys. It's sometimes you can't see each other out, and we end up having a fist fight.
Right. Yeah, that was actually we actually said this on SportsCenter, Chael and I, before the fight, that when you have two high-level wrestlers / grapplers – it sometimes turns into a kickboxing match, and it seemed like you were very comfortable keeping the fight there, but it seems like that was almost, in a way, not something that you were surprised. This is a message that you're sending out to everyone. You're not just a wrestler anymore, that you have a well-rounded game that you can hang with all the great strikers at 135. So that's the silver lining in all of this, right?
Oh, 100%. I think my last three fights, I showed leaps and bounds of improvement in my overall stand-up game. Just working with Ray Longo and Ally Quinta and these guys, repetition, drilling constantly, being a student of the game, going to these YouTube videos, just any way I can expand my knowledge and try to understand the art of stand-up fighting, because it's such an intricate thing where it's not just boxing, it's not just kickboxing, it's everything blended into one. And when you add the wrestling factor and you got guys scared of being on their back, it could be a problem for anybody.
Was there bad blood here between you two guys? Like, was it legit?
Oh yeah, I mean, from the beginning it was, but then he tried to downplay it, like, it's just Sterling. I mean, I was over it, but it wasn't like, oh, I hate this guy. You know, every time I see him, I got to turn my nose up. It wasn't nothing like that. It was more so he disrespected me coming up on the regional circuit, just talked a whole lot of shit, downplayed my striking. Even though my striking wasn't that good back then, he was right about that. But I knew if I got the fight where I wanted to be, if I fought him at that point in my career, it would be a long night for him. So it was just yin and yang of styles. And I told him, I said, if there was any time for you to fight me, it should have been a couple years ago. After my loss to Caraway and Sunset, when I called you out, after that, I think I just been going up that ladder slowly but steady.
Did you speak afterwards? Did you settle whatever differences there were?
Nah, I mean, if I seen him at the hotel, I would have had a drink with him. I really don't care, man. It's after the fight. It's after the fight. But in the beginning, I just don't try to let these guys be all butter up and nice to me and trying to make me not want to hurt them, you know, because I know when you get in there, they're going to try to, any second they get to try to separate you from your consciousness and make you their highlight reel, they're going to 100% take advantage of that. So I learned that the hard way, and I'm going to just make sure I never let that happen again. You know, there's no room for Mr. Nice Guy in this sport. It's you or them.
Yes, I like it. You know, you Long Island guys, you're too nice. We need a chip on your shoulder here, all right? Stop being nice to everyone.
What you mean? I'm Tyrone. I'm Tyrone.
That guy's a legend.
Am I allowed to curse on your show?
You know, we're corporate now, Aljo. We're now at the Worldwide Leader, so it's probably best not to. But Tyrone is a legend. I've seen that guy on Instagram. You were hanging out with him in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah. He's a good time, man. He was the one who came up with the whole skit with Wyvern and us.
Yes.
Wyvern's face was hysterical. We were just making fun of him because he thought that was like a real legit tough face. I was like, first, you have no idea what you look like right now, but it's the funniest thing, and we were just breaking his balls the entire time. But yeah, Tyrone was a cool dude to hang out with, real chill, and it was fun. It's just fun to meet people, just connect with different people in this sport. You really never know who you're gonna meet, and stuff like that. It's like, it reminds me, like, wow, like, you know, we're doing something. You know, we're doing something here.
I heard he wants to try his hand at MMA. You gonna train him?
Yeah, if he comes down, he's right in Philly, so he wants to come down, get a small training camp in or something. We'd love to have him. Maybe he could beat up on Vellante or something.
Yeah, that won't be too hard.
I mean, the guy never... Vellante's fighting this weekend, too.
That's right.
He's fighting this weekend.
That's right. Big fight for him in Prague. So here's my one complaint about the fight. I don't know what's at stake anymore at bantamweight, because Henry's going up, it seems like, now. They're doing the rematch. And by the way, are you eating tater tots? What's happening over there?
Yeah, I'm eating some tater tots.
You deserve it. You deserve it.
Tots for the boys, you know.
So what do you make of this whole situation at 135?
It's a mess right now. I'm guessing Cejudo's coming up. Is that like a definite thing? I haven't heard if it's definite or not.
It seems like they're moving in that direction.
No, honestly, I would have loved to be the guy to welcome him to the division if they weren't going that route and they were going to give it to Marlon. But at this point, I don't really know what's going to happen. If, I know they're not going to give me the Marlon rematch. I know Marlon probably wouldn't even take the rematch. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense for him. But there is a fight that does interest me. The winner of Cody Garbrandt versus Pedro Munhoz.
Oh.
So I'm not looking to sit on the sidelines for too long. I would like to fight one more time, maybe before the summer, and then take a little downtime. You know, my during this downtime period, I just want to try to hone my skills a little bit more and just get better in the whole stand-up game. And I guess a couple of things I want to work on from that last fight, a couple of notes that I got from watching it last night. And I think I could fix some stuff to help improve my game a little bit more. So I got my eye on that. Cody Garbrandt was another guy who talked a hell of a lot of shit. When I lost my first fight to Brian Caraway, he's just one of those type of guys. He comes off like he's a really nice guy, just real humble, respectful guy. I know he's doing the whole thing, this PC thing, and looking good for the cameras. Oh, I'm working with the kid that is a cancer patient. Maybe that one thing was really out of the kindness of his heart, but everything outside of that about that guy stinks. He has everything about him. He's not this persona that he tries to portray, that he's this real humble dude. He's an asshole. I've talked to the guy. I thought the guy's a cocky asshole. And honestly, I'm so glad TJ humbled him. I'm glad TJ humbled him twice over. And after TJ got knocked out, he was the first one to jump on the bandwagon and say, "I know it. I know it. I told you. Shut up, dude. Like, stop. Just stop. Eventually, we'll get to fight, and it'll be the same thing. These guys all run their mouths, and eventually, they're gonna get locked in there with me. So, let's. One day we'll meet. One day we'll meet."
So would it be fair to say you're hoping that he wins that fight against Munoz and you fight him next?
I don't give a shit, man. I don't take this stuff personal. It's just I like to pay it back in because it gives me a little bit of satisfaction when these guys run their mouth. You got the Rob Fonts and these guys that call me out when I get knocked out and, you know, this dab. And I'm like, there's something about about having some type of class in the sport where we all fight and we all have the same potential humility that could come to any one of us, and to make light of that and to try to kick someone when they're down is it's like the worst thing that you could ever do, because when it comes back to you, it bites you in the ass and it bites you hard. And these guys are all feeling that one by one, and hopefully theirs is as worse as mine was. I mean, I don't think there's anyone's going to top a dab, but it's nice to see them come back down, come off their pedestal a little bit, and join us little people.
After his loss,
I don't care who wins.
Fair enough. Marlon said, "I was embarrassed that our champion went down to 125. That, you know, he's no longer the champion in my eyes." Do you feel the same way about what happened in that TJ Cejudo fight?
I'm not embarrassed. TJ went down to 125. He's never fought at 25. Tough fight against a really tough dude. You got Henry Cejudo on your back throwing fast punches like that. I'm not saying the fight would have changed if the ref let that fight go a little longer, but he was in some trouble, you know. I would just like to have I just would have liked to have that definitive clarity that Henry Cejudo stopped TJ Dillashaw and he put him out in that first round the way that it happened, because it was a really quick fight. TJ overcommitted on that right hand, stepped in too hard. But it was fascinating how Cejudo just shoved him over and he fell. You know, he threw the right hand and missed. He ducked and pushed him off with a forearm, and he fell to the ground. And I was like, dude, that does not look like a good sign. And he's you know, he raves about his nutritionist. So you can only believe what he says in terms of how well his weight cut went. But to get back to what you're saying, I wasn't embarrassed, but I just think he got caught. And, again, it goes back to what I said before. This sport will humble everybody. Everyone gets caught. Sometimes you make a mistake. And I think if they ran that one back, which they're probably going to do, which I hate, I think it's going to be a different fight, especially at 135. It's going to be a different fight.
Why do you hate that they're running it back?
Because you have worthy contenders. You have Marlon Moraes waiting. You had Rafael Sunzao, who was waiting, who was forced to take another fight and ended up losing, getting knocked out. He pretty much got knocked unconscious, came back, and then got choked out. So he took a double whammy in that fight. You know what I mean? He was forced into a fight that he shouldn't have had to take if TJ just stayed at the weight class and done what he was supposed to do. This whole champion versus champion shit is so old and it's getting so played out because these guys are not real worthy super fights. If you're not defending your belt a couple of times, how is it a super fight? You should be cleaning out your division and then talk about super fights like a Max Holloway. He's beaten everyone in his division. So, okay, let him go up to 55. That makes sense. But to have the Conor McGregors come in, skip the line, and just fight for the belt, never defending 145, and then having the super fight, and then it's like, dude, what are we doing here? Is this even a sport anymore, or is just pure entertainment? Just let me know, because I want to follow the blueprint where I could come up with my own special blueprint and use my special recipe to get to the top so I could just skip the line to a title shot, because this is like, this is a joke at this point. And I'm pretty sure a lot of these MMA fighters can empathize where I'm coming from, because it's like, what are we doing? Are we just going to sit here and just make a mockery of all this and not respect the game? And it doesn't matter. Rankings don't mean anything. Interim titles don't mean anything. What are we doing?
Right. And you want to have a path, right? You want to know what you're fighting for. You want to know what steps you need to take in order to get that belt, right?
100%. What am I supposed to do right now? I have no idea what I'm supposed to do right now. I really don't. I tried talking with my manager, trying to figure out what's the path that I should try to take that can put me in that next spotlight or the next tier. Because that's what you have to do in this era. It's not just winning the fights anymore. It's everything that comes along with it, everything on the outside of it. And it sucks that people who don't really like to talk, they have to talk in order to get those shots. Rafael Sunsal, had he talked a little bit more, he would have gotten that title shot before that whole super fight thing. If he, Mighty Mouse, the same thing, if he was a little more interesting with the whole, oh, we're going to get rid of the 125-pound division happen, that, those conversations would never have been. If you get these guys who are brash, these guys who are talking and attracting the viewers, and I get it. Like I said, it's entertainment, but it's also sport. So it's got to be a fine line. And right now I don't know where to teeter to, because I don't want to sell my soul doing some craziness. And I still want to be me, but I still want to fight for the belt, and I still want to move up the rankings, and I still want to feel like I've put in my work and I've earned this. I don't want to feel like someone just gave me a handout.
By the way, is it
true? I don't know.
Yeah, no,
I talked about this a lot on my podcast, The Weekly Scraps. That was a plug, just letting you know.
Okay, where can people get the podcast? iTunes? Regular spots?
iTunes, Spotify, Podbean.com, or my website, AljamainSterling.com.
Look at you. Unbelievable. Renaissance man. Is it true that you also moved out of iQuinta's house? You guys aren't roommates anymore?
I know.
What happened?
I know.
You grew up?
Sometimes the birds leave the nest, man. Sometimes the birds leave the nest.
Wow. It's Where did you go?
Years.
You moved in with your girl?
Nah, not yet. But okay. I'm like what we call house hacking. So I have people living there with me. And I also do it at Airbnb. I've had some fans stay at the house. It's a little bit weird, but kind of cool at the same time. They haven't been any cycles yet, so.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a little.
Like legit fans who know who you are?
Yeah.
What a mess.
It's interesting, but it's not just me in the house. I got some of my teammates, so in case I need backup.
Okay. That is weird.
But, so 3 years, man, living with Al. It's been fun, and we're still boys, still best friends, and train together all the whole nine.
So you just felt like it was time to branch out, move on.
Well, I got to start building some equity, man. Got to start building my own equity, you know? That's what this is all about.
That's right. Yes, he probably taught you a thing or two about that, right? About real estate, building equity.
I tell you what, we started at the same time, and then Al just took off flying. His career in real estate has been, like, through the roof. Like, the exponential growth in terms of learning, the clients, how many deals he's closed, and just his overall knowledge of the whole game, especially Long Island. All I have to do is take my state test and I can get my license. But I've been trying to like study or find reasons to procrastinate. Al just told me, he's like, yo, it's like $15 or $25. Just keep taking it until you pass it. I was like, oh, well, that solves everything. Now I don't have a reason to not go do it now. So I'm going to be next joining that group.
Are you going to Prague for Volante?
I'm actually going to Cabo this weekend.
Oh, all right.
Otherwise, I would be going to Prague. I don't think I'm going to be able to swing it as much as I would love to go. I've heard nothing but good things.
Okay. All right. Well, congratulations. Enjoy the tater tots. What else are we eating over there? What's the victory meal?
I got salmon. I was going to get a burger. I was going to get mac and cheese, calamari, but I was like, you know what? Let's not blow up to 168 pounds again in 3-4 days. That's like my MO, but trying to do the right thing, eat some protein with a little bit of carbs. Still got to live a little bit.
Yes.
And that's it. I got a nice piece of salmon. Salmon, water. I got my little Hennington as possible in my bag. So we'll be getting lit. We'll be going to get lit in a little bit.
Aljamain, great performance. Congratulations on the win. Way to turn things around after the Marais fight. 3 in a row now. Back where you were just before that fight. Well done, my man. Looking forward to what's next for you. Thanks for doing this.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. There he is, the Funk Master himself, Aljamain Sterling, doing his thing in Phoenix, eating some tater tots. I mean, nothing like a celebrity tater tot meal after a big win, right? You fight, feature prelim on ESPN. You get things done against a rival, a Northeast rival like Jimmy Rivera, a man who is very hard to put away, a man who is very hard to finish, and now all of a sudden, Aljamain Sterling has won 3 in a row and very fired up about Cody Garbrandt. Wow. I knew there was a bit of a back and forth there, a bit of a history there between the two, but not a fan of his at all. And Cody Garbrandt returns in less than 2 weeks at UFC 235, March 2nd in Las Vegas against Pedro Munhoz. Big fight for him. Haven't seen him in quite some time. All right. Great stuff there from Aljamain Sterling. Now, in a matter of moments, we're going to be joined by Rose Namajunas, the reigning defending UFC strawweight champion. You may have heard the news that she is returning to action on May 11th in Curitiba, Brazil. Speaking of someone that's won three in a row, she's won two straight over Ioane Andrzejczyk. Of course, UFC 217, UFC 223. We haven't seen Rose for quite some time. Last time we saw her was April. By the time we see her again, it will have been 13 months, and a lot of people are wondering, why are you going to Curitiba? Why are you going to her home country? Why are you going to fight her on her home turf? That's Rose. That's Thug Rose. I'm curious. She hasn't talked since the fight came out. She hasn't talked in a minute, as the kids like to say. So I'm curious to hear the thought process behind it. And also, things getting very interesting at 115. With the rise of Tatiana Suarez, Cynthia Calvillo winning last night, calling out Tatiana Suarez, Nina Ansaroff with a victory as well. And so there was a little bit of talk as to who might fight Rose next, but they are going to go with Jessica Andrade, who once fought Ioane Andrzejczyk for the belt at UFC 211. And now let us not waste any more time. It has been quite some time. Like I said, we talked to Rose Namajunas on our very first episode of this show when we moved over to ESPN. A lot has happened since. There she is, Thug Rose herself, the reigning defending UFC strawweight champion. Very kind enough to join us here on the program. Rose, thank you very much for the time, and sorry for the delay there.
Oh, no problem. Well, is it okay if I can only see myself now?
You're about to see me.
Oh, okay, cool. There we go.
There I am. The magic of TV. Again, great cool. to see you, and thank you so much, Rose. First things first, I know that you were dealing last time we talked back in June when you were out gardening with Pat. The weather changed a little bit, I assume, over in Colorado. But you talked to us about your injured neck. How's the neck feeling now?
It's feeling really strong. Definitely been doing a lot of neck exercise. Every once in a while, just, training really hard, I'll get sore. But, I mean, that's, nothing like it was for the last training camp.
Okay, so you feel like it's 100% or at least close to 100%?
Yeah.
Okay. You will be fighting May 11th against Jessica Andrade, right? That's the plan?
Yes.
Now, once this fight came out, once the news came out, all the talk in the world surrounded, why is the champion, Rose Namajunas, going to Brazil to fight the challenger who is from Brazil, hostile territory? She's clearly not going to be the favorite over there. A lot of people wondering why you did this. We haven't heard from you in quite some time. Why did you agree to this fight on those terms in that place?
Hmm. Yeah, that's just how I perform best. You know, I think it's just a great opportunity. I never really ever wanted to fight out of the country, just because, like, the last time I left the country was I lived in Indonesia and, the middle of third world conditions and no running water, no electricity. And it was a really challenging, really challenging month for me because we built a house for 30 days and we were living in tents and stuff like that. And, but after that experience, it was a really difficult, like, thing that I went through, but I grew the most from it. And it's, like, one of those experiences where, you hate it and love it, And so I think fighting in Brazil is definitely, I mean, I would love to fight in my own backyard, of course, but, fighting's not about being comfortable.
Was that even offered to you? Like, was there an option to fight in America and you chose Brazil, or was Brazil the only option?
Yeah, I wanted to fight in Brazil.
Wow. That is amazing.
Yeah.
You got offered Las Vegas, chose Brazil.
That blows my mind. Hello, Pat. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good, man. How are you?
So you were offered March 2nd in Las Vegas, and you chose May 11th in Brazil.
Yeah.
Was the fact that the May 11th fight was 2 months later, just had a little more time prepared, did that help you in deciding that the Brazil fight was a better situation?
I was already like, cause they had told me March 2nd at first. So I was getting ready for that anyways. But of course more time is always better, but, sometimes you can have too much time and then it'd be like you're overtrained and stuff. So I took this break, for a reason, obviously to heal up and stuff. But, I'm just looking to get back in there no matter what.
Yeah, by the time you fight, it will have been 13 months since your last fight. Do you feel like you're starting to get, A little antsy? Like, are you itching to get back in there? Do you miss it?
Yes. I mean, definitely, like, yeah, I think so. I think I've been training, like, for the past, I'd say, 8 weeks or so. And I don't know. I'm just having fun, like, taking one day at a time. And, you know, it's a really long training camp, so you definitely want to just – you don't want to get too specific or anything like that, but I'm just having fun.
And the fact that Jessica was your next opponent, did you feel like they made the right call? Because as I said, things getting very interesting at 115, Suarez coming up, Nina Ansaroff looking very good as of late. Do you feel like she was the rightful number one contender?
Yeah, of course. I think especially after her last performance, we knew right away that we had a feeling it was going to be her next, but then after she did what she did to Carolina, I was like, yep, that's her. That's who it's going to be. And I think just fighting her in Brazil is like makes for an awesome story and build up for the fight as well.
To the best of your knowledge, is this Curitiba fight happening in that big soccer stadium where they had the last Curitiba card a couple of years ago?
Oh, I have no idea. I never really pay attention to like what venues like I'm fighting in. I just show up and fight.
If it is like a 50,000 seat soccer stadium, do you feel comfortable fighting there? Have you wrapped your head around that?
What did you say?
A 50,000 seat, because that's where they fought last time they were in Curitiba, where Verdum fought Miocic. It was in this 45,000 seat soccer stadium.
Okay, how does that compare to like Barclays or Madison?
Those are like 18, 19, 20.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I'll be cool.
Okay. All right. And you talked about wanting the time off. And the last time we spoke back in June, you talked about still, you know, dealing with what happened in Brooklyn on the bus with Connor and your coach, Trevor Whitman, spoke to us about that a couple of months later, that you were still kind of dealing with the after effects. How are you now as far as that experience is concerned?
Yeah, I'm feeling really good. I just like your body needs rest and time to heal, your mind and spirit also need to recover as well. So I'm feeling 100% and definitely not I wouldn't say I'm locked up in my house.
Okay, so you're able to go out, you feel comfortable around people?
Mostly.
Okay, well, is that something that you always kind of felt in the past as well, not really comfortable around crowds?
I've always been an introverted person, and every like definitely, like, the more, like, in my younger days, I've always had a spider sense of, like, something about to happen and stuff. And, you know, definitely all the times that something's happened, I always, like, kind of sense something right before it happened. You know, just not even too long ago, Pat was driving, like, kind of close to a truck in front of us. And I was like, I don't know why, I just get in the right lane. I don't feel right, like, behind this car. And then, you know, not 30 seconds later, just the tarp just came flying out of his truck and would have just covered our car. So it's like, you know, stuff like that. I definitely, I don't know. Maybe sometimes I'd be a little too paranoid, but at the same time, it's like, you know, it also is for a reason. But
wow. So you actually...
Also,
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no, I also just enjoy time with my family as much as possible. I think the more I get into the public eye and stuff and the more... you know, the more eyes are on me. So it's just nice to have that time away from, you know, phones and stuff like that and just have that good quality time with family and friends.
So you feel like you're past all of that. You've moved past Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure if I believed you when you did the delayed is sometimes I hear that from my wife sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's like, I mean, you know, I also haven't ever moved past from, you know, that time somebody called me Bucktooth when I was in, like, first grade either. I still get mad about that. But, or, like, Five Head or whatever.
What did they call you? What was that?
Move on.
What was the insult?
So, I remember the first time somebody picked on me, they called me Bucktooth. They called me, or Beavertooth. And then, another time somebody called me Five Head.
Yeah, what are those people saying now, right? Strawweight
exactly,
queen.
Yeah. Hit budgie.
Yeah. Take that. But I would imagine on top of everything, like winning the belt at MSG and then coming back relatively quickly, even if none of that stuff happened, you were looking forward to a break, right? Like, you needed a break. A lot happened over the span of what, like 4 or 5 months there.
Yeah.
You needed some time.
And my house is all kind of messed up too. We found out there was like all this mold in the crawl space and whatnot. So we had to clean all that out. I had to change all my windows and the siding. And so we was just, we had a lot of like adult thing to take care of as well. So, yeah.
Did you get any, did you get pressure from the UFC to come back to defend the title? Because it was approaching a year since you last fought.
Nothing like directly. I remember, they just asked about my injury a lot, you know, and then, they asked if, I just remember it's like mainly Joanna, I feel like, is the main one that had been out there talking about me coming back or whatever. But, they offered me, they wanted me to fight that Henry Cejudo card. That was a little too soon. So I turned that one down, but, yeah.
Yeah,
nothing other than that, really.
Okay, and like no real pressure, right? Like, where they weren't threatening you or anything to strip the belt or anything like that.
No, yeah,
right.
No, they've been really like respectful of my space and just like let me do my thing.
Joanna has talked about you. She's asked about you a lot. She's going back to strawweight. What do you make of her comments where she talks about your inactivity and things like that? Little
yeah, we're two different champions. We're two different people, and that's for a reason. So. You know, I just worry about me and that's it.
Okay, you don't get annoyed?
No.
Okay. What do you think about her coming back to strawweight?
I don't know. I think it's cool, but I don't know. Like, I think she's already hit, like, the top of the mountain, you know what I'm saying? Like, she already, she's already been the most, you know, dominant champion or whatever. She had a great legacy and stuff like that. And she went and fought Valentina again and, you know, Valentina definitely like dominated her most of the fight, but, if anything, you know, I don't know. I don't know what else is left for her really other than just having fights, you know.
Do you feel, Rose, that, and I know you maybe don't pay as much attention to this stuff as someone like me, but do you feel like you get the same kind of respect as the other champions? In other words, I see people say like, oh man, Jessica Andrade, she's a bulldog. She's going to go in there and submit her. Oh, Tatiana Suarez, this time next year, she's going to be a champion in the UFC. Like, just like you're almost just keeping the belt warm until one of these people come. Do you see these comments? And if so, how do you react to them?
I don't know. I'm okay with it. I'm kind of used to it. I've always been underrated. I've always been overlooked. Like, even just before fighting, just my entire life, I've always been kind of just that's the little white girl, ain't gonna do nothing, you know? But then at the same time, in the back of people's head, they're like, yeah, but don't mess with her, you know?
Right.
So, I don't know. It's cool. Like, I think I'm just gonna keep being myself, and that's all I gotta worry about, you know?
Have you been impressed with Tatiana? She seems to be the one that everyone thinks that very soon will be in that title picture.
Tatiana is definitely very impressive. I think she just keeps going the way she's going. I think she'll be there eventually, you know.
Any fun things that you and Pat did during this time off? Did you do any traveling? You talked about the Indonesia trip, which was a really cool experience that we talked about in the past. Did we do anything out of the ordinary?
I don't think so. I think what we've been doing, just been chilling, right?
Eating.
Yeah, eating a lot, working on the house.
Yeah,
and. Yeah, lots of projects on the house mainly, but you know, like little traveling here and there, but it's mostly for work and stuff. So I'm planning on after this fight in August, I'm gonna go to Lithuania to my cousin's getting married. So I'm gonna witness a like real traditional Lithuanian wedding for the first time, and you know, maybe Pat and I will do the same thing.
Whoa! What are we saying? What are we saying?
Yes.
We're saying yes? Wait, what's happening?
Oh, I don't know. Somebody was talking to me.
Oh, no. Someone else was talking? No, I was asking. You said maybe Pat and I are going to do the same? What are you implying there?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I have to check it out first.
A little shotgun wedding? Is that what you're saying? In Lithuania?
Maybe.
Whoa.
I don't know.
Are you guys engaged? Are you telling us that you're engaged right now?
We've been engaged for, like, a long time. I just never, like, we never really, I always felt weird about like weddings, like getting married, but it would be cool to have a party though.
Yeah.
And like I like being able to like call each other husband and wife and stuff, but like I don't know, just having like a contractual like thing with the government and all that, like what, I don't know, I just feel like that's like a lot of unnecessary stuff, you know, like can't we just be
right
husband and wife and leave it at that, you know?
Yeah, why do we have to get the government involved?
Yeah.
Wow, that is. Have you ever been to Lithuania?
Yeah, okay. I haven't been back since.
It's been a few years, but we've been a few times.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I'm free around August. If you guys need, you know, you need some more people at the wedding. You know, if you just want to like populate the wedding for pictures or whatever, I could probably work something out. Just consider it.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We got to budget it out first, though.
Okay, fair enough. And you're baking bread. I like the bread baking. It gets me very hungry when I see that. It's very impressive.
Yeah, I actually kind of messed up on that a little bit. I had this, like, culture going where, you know, with sourdough, you got the culture, but I messed up on that. But I still got my my kombuchas and culture veggies going, too.
Yes, I like it very much. I have to say, my daughter is very into Lion King these days, and I showed her the Ooh. Infamous video of you singing the song and then punching Pat, which I think was a Valentine's Day video, if memory serves me correct, and she found it to be very funny. At first, she was a little confused. She's only two. She was a little confused as to why you would punch another person like that, but then she thought it was very funny. So that video continues to live on and be an inspiration.
Yeah, we lowered her IQ like two notches.
It's a great video. If no one's ever seen it, I suggest, I don't know what you would YouTube, but Rose Namajunas Lion King, I think it would show up. It's a great video of you and Pat showing the world why you're such a special couple. Rose, great to catch up with you. It's great to see you again. Great to see you in good spirits. I'm looking forward to this, and props to you for taking this fight. I know not a lot of other champions would not do this. Go to Curitiba, go to Brazil to fight a fellow Brazilian. That goes down May 11th. In Brazil against Jessica Andrade. I'm looking forward to it very much. The best to you and Pat. Continued success. Great training cramp. And we'll talk to you. And by the way, is Pat going to get back in there? Or are we taking a break? Because I know there was some talk of him getting back in there. What are we doing?
Oh, I don't know. Look at his face. He's on.
Okay. That means we'll talk later?
I don't know.
So he got his ass beat.
All right. Fair enough. We'll leave it at that. Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you, Rose. All the best.
All right. Bye.
There she is, the strawweight queen herself, Rose Namajunas. Big fight, May 11th, Curitiba, Brazil. I don't know what the eye thing was, but we'll leave it at that. Okay, now let's go to Michael Page. Big win for him on Saturday against Paul Daly. The grudge match has been settled. There he is in his car with the shades on. His future is so bright, he's got to wear shades. MVP, how are you?
I'm doing good. Just enjoying the sun right now.
Yes, I feel bad that we're bothering you. I think you're in a very nice locale, so I'm sorry for all the changing of the times, but thank you very much, as always, for being patient and for joining us. Congratulations on the win. So the fight has been, a hot topic, because I think our expectations were so high, the build-up was so great, the feud was so great, that we expected, like, the greatest thing of all time. Now that you're a couple days removed, what do you think of the fight?
Yeah, it was very frustrating. For myself, one, I performed horribly in terms of just the other areas of my game, and it was a shame I didn't, I wasn't able to demonstrate things the way I wanted to. I felt seconds behind in my takedown defense, in my grappling. I just felt very blurry in that area, but I didn't expect to have that fight at all. He claimed to be one of the best stand-up fighters in the game and can knock out anybody that decides to stand with him, and he turned into a wrestler. And I think that's almost a compliment to my abilities and my stand-up. So, yeah, either way, I did say at the beginning the W is the most important thing, and even if I have to crawl across the finishing line, the W is the most important thing, and moving on and advancing in this competition is definitely the most important thing. So, and that's what I did.
So were you feeling off in the locker room or in the fight itself? Like, did you have a feeling that you might feel off?
Yeah, I wasn't, I don't know. It just mentally just wasn't necessarily the same, as sharp as I would normally feel. I wasn't feeling as confident as I would normally feel. I just thought it was just because of the just how anxious I was to actually just get in the cage. But yeah, I felt it when, you know, when things started happening, the wrong way in terms of the wrestling, I really did feel, like I said, just felt steps behind. I was even cussing myself during, as things was happening. He took me down a couple of times, and as he was taking me down, I was cursing myself. I was like, I can see this stuff, and just wasn't responding to it. But again, I don't know. I'm not going to blame. I feel like he came in with a very, very, a very tactical, very safe game plan. I think he just wanted to sneak a victory, and it worked against him.
The way you were feeling, obviously, last week we talked about the passing of your father, and your manager, Adi Attar, was on the show a little earlier and said how much respect he has for you for being able to overcome that tragedy in your life and be able to focus on this fight and be committed to the fight. Now, in hindsight, do you feel like what you experienced last month played into how you were feeling in this fight?
Yeah, 100%. It was just hard to be. Even afterwards, I was very emotional just about the journey. I really had to thank everybody because it took. I'm lucky enough to have a lot of support around me and a lot of people that really care about, you know, my success. And that support, I don't believe I would be able to make it in this sport without these people around me, and especially after losing my dad, because, like I said, he's the person that allowed me to do this. The only reason I have the abilities that I have is because of him. So it's been very, very, very difficult. And yeah, I think it did affect my performance, but I don't like to use it as an excuse at the same time. The fact is, he came in with a very good game plan. I think he was the best Paul Daly I've seen in a long time. But at the same time, he went with plan B. And I said that before. I feel like he's going to be on a very different game when he got in there. I didn't expect it to be that different, but he is very scared of me and my stand-up and just who I'm about. And it showed in how he tried to win this fight.
When you were game planning for the fight, when you were envisioning how it might go down, did the thought of him using his wrestling as much as he did ever cross your mind? Because it was interesting. I don't know if you saw, but Douglas Lima, right before the fight happened, he was on the desk with Jay Glazer and Chael and Josh Thompson. He actually predicted that he would try to shoot on you early, and they all kind of laughed at him. His prediction ended up being true. Did you think that there was a chance that he would go that route?
Well, my coach did actually say he expects him to, you know, use a couple of takedowns, just not as drastically as he did. He really, even when he got to the floor, I feel like one of the reasons why he burnt out so quickly is because even when he was on the floor, he wasn't even trying too hard to land real, real damaging shots. He was just trying to hold me down and let the time burn down. And every time we stood up, I could see it in his posture, how he was walking back to his corner. He was getting more and more tired. And even my coach was saying, he's getting tired. Again, my coach was telling me from the beginning, he's like, okay, look, round one, yes, okay, we got that round. But then he started to use the takedowns, and he said, yep, you lost this round. Yep, you lost the next round. You need to step up now. He said, yep, it's two apiece. It's going into this round. You need to start faster. You need to land more. I was being very gun shy, and maybe it was because he was, you know, throwing the takedowns, and I was trying to predict his shot and you know, using counter jump knees and things like that, and I should have just continued to fight the way I'd normally fight. But again, I just felt it was just hard for me to think. Normally this is just automatic, and it was just very difficult. I did feel very blurry during that fight again, because how tired he got in that fifth round. He made a mistake. I capitalized on it, took his back, I started beating him up, and you know, he never really kind of regained after that point. And that was it, really.
What do you make of his comments afterwards about Bellator trying to protect their investment, and, you know, they built up, you know, your story so much, so that's why you won the fight? Have you seen what he said afterwards? And if so, what do you make of it?
Again, he's going to have an excuse. The fact is, why did you not just go in there and be yourself? Why did you not go in and go plan A and actually go, strike for strike. You know, let's see who actually had the best stand-up in the mixed martial arts, in the mixed martial arts world. So all the complaints aside, it's your own fault. You kind of have to blame yourself to not actually getting this victory. I think it was quite clear. I watched the fight back. Like I said, I made stupid amounts of mistakes, like horrible mistakes, and then even watching them back, it was hard. I was so pissed off. But either way, you yourself, you know, let this fight go.
So you say that you were pissed off, that you made some big mistakes. Like, is this one of the fights that you've had in Bellator that you're least proud of? That like we didn't really see the full MVP in this fight.
Yeah, 100. Obviously, there's quite a high expectation for me because of, you know, the way I, you know, I tend to finish fights and the way I can fight. So I'm not necessarily worried about that. And at the same time, I am proud of myself. It was a difficult fight. It was a tough fight. I'm proud of myself to be able to keep grinding, even when I wasn't feeling at my sharpest, to keep grinding, keep hustling right the way through and get back up every single round, still feeling confident. A lot of people, you know, they question my fitness, and I feel like, you know, people can see how tired he was in comparison to myself. I was still in the fight after five rounds, and he wasn't. And it did show. My abilities in some areas did show, but just in other areas, just it looked horrible, and that's what I'm the most disappointed at.
Yeah, that was the first time you went five-minute rounds, right?
Yeah, 100%. And this is why I kind of say there's certain things I can be proud about.
Right. Afterwards, did you guys talk? Did you squash the beef?
I actually haven't seen him again.
Okay.
And as I said to yourself before the show, there's no way this beef is going to end. I have zero respect for that man even now. In fact, probably more so now, because all that talk about you being able to, you know, going to knock me out, it might have been a tactic, but I just think it's stupid that you've just shown the world that you have to fear my stand-up. So at the same time, thank you, but yeah, I have zero respect for you now.
Okay, you think it's inevitable you guys will fight again?
Potentially. I said this before, actually. I said the only reason why I may give him another chance is purely because I feel like the fight should have happened in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And because of how close the fight was now, there's obviously another reason for it to be, you know, for it to happen again, potentially. But it just depends on where our paths go. Where does he go from here? Who does he fight now? The most I can see at the moment is maybe a rematch with Larkin. And I know, I feel like Larkin will, you know, is not going to make that same mistake again. He was winning the fight right the way through until, you know, he got caught, which is always a risk with Paul Daly. But I don't think he'll make that mistake again. And then again, where do you go from there? And if I continue, I've got a very difficult opponent now in Douglas Lima. If I'm able to overcome that and move on, and then again overcome the last obstacle, the last wall, and become a champion, I don't feel you deserve to have a rematch.
I don't know how much you read the stuff, but it seems like everyone online saying like, oh, okay. And it's funny because it seems to happen with every step. All right, now he got over the Daly hump. Now watch what Lima's going to do to him. Now he's going to expose him. Now he's going to get, right? You see that as well?
But it's exactly what I had said before. And I can't remember if I said it on your show, but I had spoken to somebody and I had said exactly the same thing. I was like, once I get past Paul Daly, there's going to be a reason as to why I beat Paul Daly. Oh, he wasn't in his prime, but look what Douglas Lima is going to do to him next. You know, if I was to overcome Douglas Lima, then they're going to be like, yeah, well, you know, now it's going to be a real test for him because, you know, Douglas, there's always going to be some sort of excuse. The fact is, yes, Douglas Lima is an amazing athlete, and aside of just my development, he's always going to be a difficult task. But you know, he's not unbeaten. He's there, you know, people have answered that question with him before, so it's definitely possible. So I'm just looking forward to the challenge, and like I said, I'm focusing on my own development. It's not about the people. It's not about anybody else. They're going to enjoy they're going to enjoy loving me, or they're going to enjoy hating me. Either way, they're going to watch, and I'm just going to enjoy being myself and enjoy my own journey.
And last thing for you, Michael, are you okay with the relatively quick turnaround? I mean, they announced this fight, the Lima fight, even before your fight went down. Is that okay with you?
Obviously, we was told we was up to date with stuff before it actually went out.
Okay.
I'm okay with it because it means I can be more active.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm not okay with is now that I'm on holiday, I'm gonna have to start training while I'm out here.
That's right. Well, you have a little less than 3 months, so it's not a month turnaround. But I was curious about that because sometimes you plan these things, someone can get hurt in a fight, but in the end, it seems like you did not get hurt in the fight. You walk away with the victory. Mm-hmm. You move on in the tournament, one step closer to that title, and also that $1 million from 50 Cent. And by the way, 50 Cent, I mean, can you act like you want to be there? I felt like he just kind of walked in there, he gave you the thing, and then just like, be a little excited, 50 Cent. Really? Did you feel the same? I felt like he wasn't showing you the love.
A few people had said that, but I was more focused on myself. I was in my own mind at that time, and very disappointed with certain aspects of myself. But then, at the end of the day, like I said, whether I had to crawl past that through that finishing line, I was going to get there, and I said that to everybody, and I've done that now. So it's just on to the next.
Congratulations, Michael. Appreciate you doing this. Congrats on the big win. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you do next in the tournament against Douglas Lima, May 11th in Rosemont, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. Thanks so much, MVP. Congrats.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thank you for having me again. Take care.
All right, there he is, the one and only Michael Venom Page. Big win for him against Paul Daly. Something tells me at some point in their careers we may see them again. For now, though, he moves on in the tournament. We'll see what's next for Paul Daly. Okay. Welterweight division in the UFC, always a very interesting place. One man who is itching to get back in there is Santiago Ponzinibbio, the pride of Argentina. He joins us right now via the magic of Skype. Santiago, how are you?
Hello, Ariel. What's up, brother?
It's good to see you, man. I don't recognize you with this long beard. You know who you look like? Jorge Santiago. You know Jorge Santiago?
Yeah. I know him.
You look like him with this beard.
Different.
Yes.
Yeah, different style. Yeah, it's good to switch a little bit. Yeah.
I like it. Well, it's good to have you on the show,
man.
Santiago, and I know that you're itching for a fight. So what's going on here? You want to fight Rafael Dos Anjos. You guys have been going back and forth for quite some time. You want this fight, right?
I want this fight, man. I'm ready. I want it for him. I don't understand really very good what is that happened, I asked him for him for the fight in Argentina. You remember? He say no, I can go to Argentina. Blah 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 blah. Okay, and after that I asked him for him, and UFC told me he moved to 155. After that I asked him for him. Stay in his injury for 1 year, no fight. I understand very well for him in the interviews in Brazil for Canal Combate. He says he likes the fight for me, I don't understand very well, but, the point is, I want for fight RDA. I am ready for him. I'm waiting for him. I don't have any problem to fight with him in Brazil, in your house. I can fight in America. I can fight in China, in any place. This is the fight I think is really interesting, is for the rankings, makes sense, number 5 and number 7. It's big rivalry, Argentina, Brazil, and this is personally, for me, him is a bitch, He say, I can go to Argentina, blah, blah, blah. I say, okay, I go to Brazil. If you like, we can fight in Curitiba, man. I go to your house. I no problem, man. I finish in your house. But, I ask him for my manager, for Ekawa, the first round. He say, can you visit? So, is him moved to 155? He's injured, I don't know what is the happen, but or RDA not told the truth, or UFC not told the truth, but if RDA likes the fight with me, I'm waiting for him. I am ready for him, This is the fight. This is a really good fight, I'm waiting for him. It's real that him likes to fight. I am here, man. I'm waiting him.
Why do you want this fight so badly?
Why?
Why do you want the fight so badly?
I think it's a good match, man. I don't like him, He's, I never ask him about the opponents. Always I say, yeah, for you. If you say I don't have any problem, I like the fight, But, I see a few times him, I don't like the energy, this guy, It's him asking is better the other guy, I don't know. I say, hey, go to fight in Argentina. No, I don't go to Argentina. Why, man? I go to fight in Brazil. I go to for Brazilian guys. I go to fight in Europe for European guys. I go to Canada for Canadian guys to fight. Yeah, I say right now, man, if he like the fight, if he Wi-Fi me, I go to Brazil for fight him. If he like fight in America, fight in any place, man, I wait to fight him. I waiting for him. But he say in the media, he say for in Brazil, he likes the fight to me. But, you know, for UFC, say other different history. I don't know where is the real point here, you know, but anything not tell the truth, you know, or UFC or him, you know, but I say, man, if him don't like the fight me, okay, I move, I looking for other fight, I continue my career, you know, but if he like fight me, I am ready, I waiting for him, you know.
Okay, so you're saying this in the press. Have you or your management come out and gone to the UFC and said, we will go to Curitiba to fight this man, we will go to Brazil, no problem? Have you told them that? And if so, what are they saying?
Yes. And say him's injury now.
Ah.
His injury for 1 year. And the other time I asked him for him, say no, he moved to 155. You know, always say it's different excuses, you know. I don't know.
So I spoke to him late last week, and he said he's interested in the fight, but no one's asked him about fighting you, and that he was good to go, but no one's approached him about fighting you. So why do you think the UFC isn't coming? If you want this fight so badly, you're a top contender, and you've won, what, 8 in a row, 7 in a row? Why
yeah,
aren't they making this?
Victories in a row.
Right.
I don't know, man. I don't understand. I told you, man, I always say yes for UFC, always. I never say no. Always say yes, man. Always ask me about the fight. I said yes. I don't have any problem. In 2017, I fought 3 times outside the America. You know, I go 2 times for Canada. I go to Europe. You know, always in the house of my opponents. I don't have problem, man. I fight for anybody in any place. Just only I need to stay 100%. You know, UFC call me asking me the fight for March. I say, no, in March, no, my knee is not really good. I need more time. And the April or May, I am 100% for fight for anybody, you know. But before that, it's no good time for me. But, you know, I always say yes for opponent, you know. I have a proof, man. I beat a number 8 in the world in 82 seconds. Gordon Nelson is a tough prospector. I finished him 82 seconds, man. After that, give me the fight with Mike Perry. Him is a no ranking guy, danger guy. I take the fight. I fight. I beat him. You know, always I say yes. I don't have any problem. But for first time in my career, I ask him about anything. You know, I ask him for him in Argentina. I say no, he can go to Argentina. The only guy I said go to Argentina is Nate Magny. Okay, I beat Nate Magny. After that, I beat RDA. I said, UFC tell me, okay, you can. And you know, right now, I ask him for RDA, and I don't understand what is the happen, bro.
Well, who did they want you to fight in March when they approached you?
What?
Who did they want you to fight in March? You said that they approached you.
Asking me the fight first for Thompson, and after that, asking me the fight for guarantee. Yeah, I say yes, no problem, but end the April or May.
Okay.
Not before that. My knee is no good, and I stay 100%. After that, I fight. April, May, I am ready, you know.
Do you think they're punishing you because you said no to that fight because you weren't ready and now they're not giving you the fight that you want?
Brother, I always say yes for UFC. Always go to the house of my opponents, you know. I never ask him for anybody. I always say yes. And, you know, just the only reason I say no for this time is for my knees. No, 100%, man. I can go to the cage in 80%, brother. The people... Yeah. After the fight, the people don't care if you know stay 100% for the fight, 90%. You know, this is the compromise I have for myself. You know, I need to go to the fight 100%. I don't have any problem for fight anybody in this division. You know, I finish all guys in this division. I can finish all guys in 170 pounds. I don't have any problem. The only I need to go 100%. You know, this is my only concern. You know.
And I know that you're focused on RDA, but at the top of today's show, We spoke to a young man named Vicente Luque, who's looked very good. He's from his family's from Brazil and Chile, and he said he'd love to fight you. It'd be a huge fight in South America, right? Because he's of Brazilian and Chilean descent, and you're from Argentina. What do you think of Vicente Luque? Is this of any interest to you?
I think the guy is, you know, it's coming well, but you know, this fight is nothing for me. He's not standing in the rankings, you know. Mm. He's not standing in the rankings, nothing, man. For what reason I fight with him, man?
Mm.
You know, I have 15 fights for Stufa, 13 victories, 70 victories in a row, man. You know, maybe if he won a little bit more fights, he stay in the rankings, maybe. But right now, no interest. This is nothing for me, you know. This okay. fight is good for him, not for me, you know. He don't have nothing interesting on me, you know.
Okay, I understand. So, in conclusion, Santiago, what's the message to RDA? RDA is watching right now. What do you want to say to this man?
If he really likes the fight to me, he say to fight to me. He say for UFC, I waiting for him, man. I want to fight him. I want to fight RDA in like fighting Brazil, in America, any place. I waiting for him. If he likes to fight me, say yes. If he can. Scary with me, I have, okay, no problem. He told me, I'm scary at you. It's okay, I'm looking for other fight. But if him like to fight with me, he say, man, he need to say, hey, I like to fight Pulcinibio. If we make this fight happen, you know, for he like fight me. I like the fight him, this interesting fight, you know, makes sense about the ranking, makes sense, a big rivalry, Argentina to Brazil. It's a personal fight, it's really good. I think it's a really good match, you know.
Thank you, Santiago. I appreciate it very much. Good luck getting the fight. I would love to see it happen. And especially you going now to enemy territory, going to Curitiba, that'd be a fun storyline as well. So good luck getting the fight, and thank you very much for the time. And keep the beard growing, my friend. I like it.
Thank you. Thank you, Ariel. Thank you for your time, man.
Okay. You're the man. There he is, Santiago Ponzinibbio. I love the way he says my name, Ariel. I love it. It reminds me of some of my family members. Great stuff there. He's a passionate guy. He knows what he wants. He's been trying to get this fight against RDA for quite some time. Tried to get it in Argentina. Now he's saying, all right, I can't get it in Argentina. I'll go to Curitiba, May 11th. I'll go to Brazil and fight this man. We'll see what happens. Sounds to me like maybe they were mad that he didn't take the Till fight, and now they're trying to, you know, go in a different direction and not give him what he wants. But that's a fight that has a backstory to it and would probably be of great interest to the fans over there and to the fans over here as well. All right, great stuff from Santiago Ponzinibbio. One more guest to go. He had a big win at UFC 234 in Melbourne, Australia last weekend. He's 10-0 in his professional career, 2-0 in the UFC. He is a product of the Dana White Contender Series show, had a victory on that show back in July, then made his debut against Paul Craig in December, finished Paul Craig in the third round, and then returned last weekend in Melbourne against Sam Alvey, defeated Sam Alvey in the first round. I'm talking about Jimmy the Brute Crute, who is one of the rising stars at 205 pounds. He joins us now via the magic of Skype. Jimmy, how are you?
I'm very well, mate. How are you?
I'm doing great. Where are you right now, Jimmy?
I'm in Lawn in near Geelong in Victoria, Australia, obviously. And we're just getting attacked by some birds out here.
Wow. So is this is your house?
Nah, I wish. We're just going away for a few nights.
Oh, this is like a vacation spot.
Yeah.
Okay, and you've got like parrots behind you over there.
Yeah, they're called cockatoos.
Cockatoos. That's amazing. They're just that's incredible. Is there all kinds of animals around you or just those kinds of birds?
There's cockatoos, kookaburras, kangaroos.
Whoa.
There's a fair bit.
Like kangaroos, like you could just walk right up to them or are they dangerous?
Nah, they're all right.
Wow.
I'd leave you alone.
This is amazing. I don't know if we've ever had anyone join us from a locale like this, so I appreciate it very much. Well, thank you for joining us. Congrats on the early success in your career that you're experiencing. Congrats on the win last weekend. So this was an interesting fight. I mean, clearly you were overpowering him. You were the better fighter. But in the end, there seemed to be some controversy. He put up the thumbs up. Mark Goddard, the referee, said, no, you were out. But since then, Goddard has said maybe in hindsight it was a little premature. What do you make of his comments afterwards? Do you feel like the fight was stopped prematurely?
I feel like it might have been a little bit premature, but I don't think it was controversial. If you sit there with your thumb up, it doesn't stop you from getting knocked out or hurt. He could have been doing a lot more to scramble or to improve his position. I think at the end of the day, there was no way for him to win that fight from there on. When I grabbed him, when I threw that head kick, he caught it, and I threw it, I pulled guard and swept him. It was like throwing a sleeping body. There was no resistance, and he was just accepting a bad position. So, with the punches that hit him on the shoulder, I was throwing those ones just till I could set my position, and then I hit him twice in the head, and I sort of had my position set, and then I was just going to unload. But by the time that was already, Mark Goddard had already stopped the fight. So, you know, I don't think it was controversial. I think it was just a little bit premature.
Okay, but you think that, you know, like we're talking about a few more seconds, we're kind of, you know, delaying the inevitable here. You were en route to finishing him in that sequence.
Yeah, exactly. I'd had my position set by then. You know, when you're throwing those shots to the head, half the time you're just trying to keep them busy, distract them while you set your position. So, I know it is what it is. I don't really mind. I got my win bonus, so it doesn't matter.
So you've moved on.
Yeah, exactly. There's no point fessing about it.
What is it like for and how old are you? You're in your mid 20s?
Early 22.
22, so not even mid 20s yet. What is it like for a youngster experiencing this early success in the UFC, getting a chance to fight on a pay-per-view card in Australia? Is this happening a little sooner than you expected?
No, I had high goals when I first got into this sport. You know, I didn't want to pad my record. I didn't want to take the easy route. I sort of just wanted to get thrown to the wolves, and that's what I've done my whole career. You know, I love it. I'm very grateful to be living this life. I've put in the work, and you know, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to take it one fight at a time, but I also don't want to be stagnant, and I don't want to pad my record, as I said. And yeah, I'm very happy and excited.
My understanding is that you were exposed to this sport for the first time when you saw Gabriel Gonzaga knock out Mirko Krokop, who coincidentally is still fighting, fought this past weekend against Roy Nelson, and you saw that, then you went to tell your parents, I'm going to do this for a living. Is that true? And if so, what about that fight and that knockout made you actually want to do this for a living?
It wasn't even the whole fight. It was on YouTube back when I was a kid. It was just highlights. You could never really get a fight to watch. Like, it was a rare thing. But, I don't know, it was just the brutality of it. And to me, it looked like the most challenging thing I could ever choose to do. So why not do it?
Because if I'm in your shoes in that moment and I see someone get knocked out like that and go down, like the way Krokop's leg went down there, the way his knee just kind of bent, that's the last thing in my life that I want to do. Like, that's the thing that I see and I'm like, yeah, I'm never going to do that ever again. So it's fascinating to me that you would watch that and say, that's brutal. I want a part of that. I want to do that. I want a piece of that action. That to me is kind of unbelievable that it would be that moment that would trigger your interest in the sport.
Yeah, I get that a lot. I'm a weird guy.
Okay, fair enough. Did you do any martial arts before that?
Yeah, I've done karate since I was a little kid for a bit, and then I started judo for about 3 years before that.
And your father was a boxer, right?
Yeah, he did everything. He was, I don't know his exact amateur record, but he had a pretty decent amateur record. He did judo and all that other stuff. He did MMA before it was cool.
Okay, wow. So he's on board, because sometimes when you have the boxing father, he's not really on board with the MMA stuff, but he's fully on board with this.
Yeah, he's on board. He doesn't try and be coach. He doesn't try and he gets involved, but he gets involved as a dad. He never tries to direct my career and stuff. He just wants to be dad, which is really cool.
Speaking of coaches, one of your coaches is a legend in Australia, the great Sam Greco, kickboxing legend. How did you link up with him, and what a treat it must be for you to have him by your side as you're going down this path in your career?
Yeah. It's amazing. I've been a massive fan of Sam Greco since I was, I think the first fight I ever watched, the first K1 fight, I would have been about 15 maybe. I don't know, but yeah, it was one day my jiu-jitsu coach is just like, oh, I'm going to tee up with Sam Greco when we're looking for a striking coach. And I was like, oh, that would be amazing, not really thinking too much of it. And then a few years later, we had a mutual friend, and yeah, it's my jiu-jitsu coach went through the effort and hooked us up. And I used to travel down to Melbourne from Bendigo, which is 2 hours each way. I'd go down 4 to 5 times a week and back just to train with him.
I remember, I don't even know if you were born yet. Maybe like you were 1 or 2 years old. Sam Greco was going to compete for World Championship Wrestling, but then they got sold and he never actually made his debut for WCW professional wrestling. Did you know about this? Like they made all these vignettes about him. It was like this big deal that he was going to come over.
Yeah. I've obviously seen like footage.
You've seen all
stuff
that stuff. Why didn't it ever happen? Because they got sold and then he never moved to WWE or anything like that?
I think he jacked his neck up really bad.
Oh, okay.
Jumping off the top rope or something in practice. I don't know. I'm sure he's told me the story, but yeah, it's pretty cool. I had him touring with Goldberg and stuff.
Well, yeah, incredible. Legends. Why do they call you the Brute?
They don't anymore, but I don't know. Because, I don't know.
What do you mean they don't anymore?
I sort of dropped it a little bit, but I guess it was just my fighting style. I just always come head first. So
Buffer didn't say it? I don't recall now. He didn't say it in the cage? Nah. No, you asked him to drop it.
I didn't ask him. I just didn't put it on my thing.
Okay.
On my little piece of paper you have to give him.
You want to move on from that?
I don't want to move on, but I just don't use it.
You don't love it. And do you have another nickname?
Nah.
Okay.
Not one that I can use in the octagon anyway.
Oh, okay. I like that. So you talked about you don't want a padded record. So it sounds like you want the fast track, right? You want to fight top guys.
Yeah, I just want to test myself. I've always said I would rather lose to a top 10 guy than beat a bunch of bums. So people think I'm crazy for wanting to fight the best guys off the bat, but I just think I'm like, why? I'm in here for a good time, not a long time. I at least want to, at the end of the day, I want to say that I fought the best guys in the world.
So who comes to mind? Anyone next?
Anyone in the top 15.
Anyone?
Don't mind. Anyone.
Did they put you in the rankings yet or not yet?
I don't believe so. I don't really check, but.
Neither do I.
I don't know. Maybe next time.
So there's no name in particular, though, that tickles your fancy?
I would love to fight a legend like maybe Shogun or Little Nog, or I'd love to fight guys that I grew up looking up to.
Right. Yeah, that's the dream, right? To knock off your heroes, so to speak.
Yeah. But as I said, anyone, I don't mind.
How quickly do you want to get back in there?
I've had a massive year. Lot of work in and outside of the octagon. But I wanna have a little bit of time off, maybe a few weeks, and then I'll be sick of it and want to jump back in. But I don't really want to rush anything now. I wouldn't mind coming back mid-year, but if they offer me something beforehand, I'm not one to say no to the UFC.
Okay, yeah. And Mauricio Shogun Hua is currently ranked 13th, so that would constitute. Although, if I'm being honest, I would be a little bit, I don't know, uncomfortable with that matchup because I feel like you're going like this and he's going like this.
He's won his last 3, hasn't he?
Well, no, he lost to Anthony Smith, right?
Oh, yeah.
Before, but he did win his last one.
He's had a winning.
Although you're Jimmy the Brute Crude, you're a hard hitter. You scare me.
Yeah, he's fought harder hitters than me, though.
Yes, that is true. Nice win over Tyson Pedro in his last fight. Right, absolutely.
Yeah, I was there. That was a good fight.
Yes, that was a very good fight. Would you like to fight in America again?
I'd love to. I've fought, I always say I don't mind where it is. If the UFC tell me to be there, I'm going to be there. I'm not going to say no to the UFC ever. So,
absolutely. And now, what are we doing in this thing? Is it like a safari thing? What do we do there during the day?
Okay, there's a. I don't know if you can see it.
Oh, I can see it.
But behind the bush, there's a beach, and there's like heaps of hiking tracks, and I don't know, we just sort of kick back, try and because my life's hectic most of the time, so I just try and chill, kick back and enjoy it. Wow. Enjoy the serenity, calmness.
It looks incredible. Well, enjoy it, my friend. You certainly deserve it. You've been very busy as of late. Big win last weekend. Appreciate the time very much, especially while you're on vacation. I didn't know that you were on vacation, so thanks for doing this early in the morning over there. And continued success to you, Jimmy. It's been fun watching you these last couple fights in the UFC, and 205 could certainly use some fresh faces like yourself, so this is exciting stuff.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you very much for having me on.
It is my pleasure. Thank you so much. There he is, Jimmy Crute. Not the Brute anymore, just Jimmy Crute, all right? Don't call him that. But yes, I've been talking a long time about how 205 is shallow and, you know, lamenting the fact that they need some faces. All of a sudden, 205 has some faces, some young faces. Johnny Walker, Jimmy Crute. And how about this little plug, my friends? Are you ready for it? You see how I do that? You see the transition? That's what's being a veteran is all about. Because this weekend in Prague, hit the music. Show the full screen, Corporate Jake. This is for you. You're not ready for it. I'm trying to give you a plug here. I'm trying to put over the company. Not only ESPN has turned into like the home of all things combat sports, they have turned into the worldwide leader in combat sports, because not only crushing it with the UFC stuff, just announcing this morning that Tyson Fury is coming to ESPN with a top rank deal. They announced the ratings. I don't like to tout the ratings too much because I feel like that's like, you know, a little Barry Horowitz of us. You know, that's not for me to do. So I'll retweet it, but man, I don't want to get into the weeds here on the program. But how about this? Main card this weekend's on ESPN Plus, but we've now moved the prelims from ESPN Plus to ESPN 2 because they can't get enough of it. Everyone wants a piece of the MMA action here at the Worldwide Leader. This is very exciting. A lot of exciting things going on. The UFC Destined episode last week, I know that was only on ESPN Plus, but the one with Cron Gracie and Alex Caceres, that was really well done. Anyhow, UFC is back this weekend with the main card, and it's the first show in Prague, by the way, the first show in the Czech Republic. Do you guys know who the first ever Czech-born fighter was to win in the UFC? Does anyone know? Anyone? Show of hands. Is there anyone out there that can answer this question? His name was Carlos Vemola. Yes, Carlos Vemola. You are correct. And he won at UFC 122, November of 2010. He beat Seth Petruzzelli, the man who defeated Kimbo Slice way back when. That was the first ever win in the UFC by a Czech-born fighter, and now here they are making their debut in the beautiful city of Prague, Czech Republic. Anyway, the main event is a light heavyweight fight. It's Thiago Santos Maheta against Jan Błachowicz. I believe it's Błachowicz, not Błachowicz, not Błachowicz, it's Błachowicz of Poland. Two guys who have looked very good as of late at 205, so this is good. Stefan Struve is fighting Marcos Rogério de Lima, John Volante against Michael Oleanchuk, Liz Carmouche against Lucy Pugilova, John Dodson against Peter Yan. That's a great fight as well. Who else is on this card? Oh, how about this one? Chris Fishgold, former Cage Warriors champion, fighting against Daniel Taimur, and the list goes on and on and on. So that's this weekend on ESPN Plus. And like I said earlier, Bellator back as well this weekend with the James Gallagher card. It's like essentially Team SBG against the world. That's in Dublin, Saturday, February 23rd as well. So a little European MMA action coming your way this weekend. Corporate Jake, tell me to wrap. Corporate Jake, I am efforting a wrap right here, okay?
Oh, are you?
Efforting a wrap. When are we going to hear your voice again? Now that we moved to the studio, everyone
right
asking.
Now.
Oh, this is on the air?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Is this your debut?
This is my debut.
Corporate Jake got me this belt. The Nose World Order, my friends.
Who gave you that idea, Nose World Order?
Someone on Instagram gave me that idea. Love it. Drink it up. Soak it in. I didn't actually call for the music.
That's okay.
But look at this thing. Oh, it's upside down. It's like the time Dana White puts the belt upside down on someone. Anyway, I love this belt. Now a fixture on her desk. Look at that. The Nose World Order. You see? No N, not new, Nose World Order. See what we did there? Very fun. All right, we are out of time. What a great day it has been. Jam-packed show. Let me just say, Sunday night shows are tough as far as booking this particular show is concerned, like Sunday night events, because you don't really know what's going to happen. But in the end, I'm very happy with how things turned out. Want to send our best to Paul Felder, by the way, who suffered that collapsed lung in the fight against James Vick. Hopefully he'll get released from the hospital tomorrow in Phoenix and that he makes a speedy recovery. Also Jessica Penne, who suffered a freak ankle injury right before her fight against Jody Escobel yesterday morning as well. Okay, we're out of time. Thanks to everyone who tuned in. Thanks to all our guests, Vicente Luque, Scott Coker, Steve Miocic, Adi Attar, Francis Ngannou, Michael Venom Page, Aljamain Sterling, Rose Namajunas, Santiago Ponzinibbio, and also the great Jimmy Crude. We're on ESPN2 and ESPN News later this week. If you missed anything, check it out. YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, all those places and more. Back next week, same time and place. Until I say peace, I'm out of here.